Hi, I'm Jason Wahlstrom. I do a podcast called Entertainment Landfill. It used to be called Nowhere in Mulberry, but now it's just Entertainment Landfill. I do Entertainment Landfill with my two best friends, Bill and Steven. We've been doing the show since 2005. On the show, we talk about film, television, video games, and pop culture. Right now, we're doing the show monthly, but we really want to do it weekly, and I want to do the show full time. You can make that happen by becoming a patron of Entertainment Landfill using Patreon. It's a lot like Kickstarter, only it's not a campaign for one big project. It's for artists that put out a continuous stream of projects. Projects like Entertainment Landfill. It's kind of like PBS, how they ask their viewers to pledge funding for their shows. You're pledging to Entertainment Landfill. Here's how you do it. You go to patreon.com/landfill. Pledge the amount that you'd be comfortable contributing, $1, $2, or more. Then check out the cool rewards you get for becoming a patron. Doing this will ensure that Entertainment Landfill continues for a long time. Think about it. For the low amount of $1 or $2 a month, it's the price of a cup of coffee, a Shasta, a hamburger, a breakfast burrito, a Tootsie Pop. You could help the show bring you more than 12 hours of entertainment. 12 hours a month. We want to do the show every Friday, and we want to bring you more film, television, video game, and pop culture talk. Also, please know that the show is still free, and it always will be. This is your way of supporting the show and ensuring that we'll be around for a long time to come. There are a number of costs that go into creating the podcast, hosting fees, and my own personal time. Producing the show takes many hours. Your monthly contribution will afford me the extra time I need to help make the show great and release it on a regular basis. Become a patron. Visit patreon.com/landfill. Support Entertainment Landfill. Thank you. You're listening to Entertainment Landfill. Film, television, pop culture. It's where you find it. Hey everyone! Welcome! It's time for another NIM Movie Mini. Hey, we can't call them ETL Movie Minis. That doesn't roll off the tongue. It's a NIM Movie Mini.
We're still NIM Productions.
Yeah, NIM Productions presents ETL, but today we present Lethal Weapon, Bill. Lethal Weapon, a 1987 action crime, action cops and robbers, crazy cops film. Awesome.
I can't believe, for some reason in my head, I pictured it as like 85 or 86, but you're right, 87, geez.
Yeah, 87. I was in high school, and I can honestly, I'll always remember going to see Lethal Weapon the first time because the projector broke down and we had to get our money back, and we didn't get to see the film that night. It was so disappointing.
Wow, that sucks.
I don't even remember at what point it broke down, but it was, I'm going to say it was well into the film.
How many reels do you think?
My brain is telling me it was at the gun range scene.
Wow.
And
so
it was,
you were invested.
Yeah, it was literally, you could see the film bubble up on the screen and everyone go, oh.
That's only like that. Happened to me one time. It was Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, man. And I remember just droves of people going out and they were handing out movie passes as you walk by, and it was just like, Dad, let's go somewhere else to see it. It's too late, son. We're not going to be able to see it anywhere. I was just like, you know, when you're a kid, you want immediate.
Instant gratification. Hell, I still want instant gratification.
And it was just like, oh, man. And I remember I didn't get to see it finally until maybe a week later with my friends. They all wanted to see A Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Warriors.
Oh, screw that.
And I was looking on IMDb, like, to see if Dream Warriors came out the same weekend. It actually came out the week before, on February 27th.
Well, they should have went to see it then.
Mm-hmm.
This is Lethal Weapon time, people.
So it came out on February 27th, and then, of course, Lethal Weapon came out March 6th. So I think one person in the group had actually seen it, and they're like, oh, man, it's badass, man, like Freddy, and there's like a wizard master.
In my dreams, I am the wizard master.
Man, we got to go see that. And I was like, dude, we got to go see Lethal Weapon. What the hell's that? Oh, you know, it's got Mad Max in it, and he's a cop or whatever.
Yeah, and that abusive black guy from The Color Purple.
Yeah. Oh, man, screw that. Let's go see Freddy.
Sorry, kid. I don't believe in fairy tales.
But somehow I got him to do it, and of course it was awesome. When we finally
I'm jealous. I was 8 years old in 1987, so I would have loved to have seen Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, we did.
But
this.
I saw it a year later. That's when I first saw it. I saw it a year later on HBO because they used to show that scene on the rooftop where Martin Riggs handcuffs the guy and jumps into the gigantic air pillow over and over and over again. And I was like, I got to see that. That's awesome. Are they showing like stunt work? What's doing with that? And I finally saw it, and I was exposed to...
I was 16.
My first set of amazing breasts. I was like 8 years old, and I'm watching it. I'm like, is that girl naked? That girl's naked! Oh my god, that girl's naked! Like, that was that's what I remember the most about it.
I remember one friend that I saw it with, this guy Walt. He was one of those dudes who talked way too loud in movie theaters. And like when it opens up the film with Amanda Hunsaker topless or whatever, you know, she's like laying there in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, damn, she's fine. Like way too loud. It's like, dude, just calm down. Calm yourself.
What are you, 8 years old?
He literally did. He was the kind of guy like we were all riding in a car together. He would say to some girl like, damn, you're fine, or something. Like a girl's going to go.
There's no limiter on what's appropriate.
Yeah, like a girl's going to go, oh my gosh, thank you, and like pull
over.
Like
he has a Mr. Microphone.
Yeah, hey, good looking. And she'd be like, oh, hi, what's your phone number? I'll call you sometime. You know, it's like dude, no girl like is into that, so shut
no,
up.
No, I never understood that, like where guys picked that up or thought that was a good idea, especially as having, I had three sisters, you had two sisters, so it just.
Yeah.
You understand how the female mind works a little more, and that just was that's
my favorite
insane.
Is like the Hispanic like workers who go like, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
Like do the whistle.
Oh my god, that's so hot! Let's go. You picked the spot. I can't believe you can whistle so well.
Oh hi, you're interested in me. Let me walk on over. No, it's more like, hey, where are you going? Hey, baby.
They don't understand that that's rapey.
Yeah. You're being rapey right now. Oh, yeah. Maybe I should tone it down. But, you know, dude, 16 years old. I was a fan of the Road Warrior franchise. I mean, Mad Max franchise.
Yes.
And so I was excited about that. That's how I knew Mel Gibson at the time. You know, he was Mad Max, right?
Yeah, and he was still living in Australia at the time.
Yeah, Mad Max, eh?
Who are you?
Hey, Max.
You're smart.
I have a feeling, knew who Mel Gibson was, but this was the franchise that made him, like, a huge star.
Yes.
Because...
Well, this, I mean, come on. His performance in this movie, I'm shocked. I mean, maybe just because the Academy is very hoity-toity and don't really hold up dramatic action films, but... His performance is one of the best of any action film ever.
Well, he...
I mean, this is
Mel
amazing.
Gibson, he was electric. He had all this, like... He drew you to him.
Yeah.
When you watch that film, he's... He... your eyes just pull towards him. He radiates on the screen, as they say.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at it now, Martin Riggs dresses ridiculous. I don't know what the hell he's wearing. His hair is awful.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Mel Gibson pulls it off, though. I mean, he made films like Gallipoli and, like, The Year of Living Dangerously and The Bounty, The River,
yes.
Mrs. Sofel, and then the Mad Max series. So, like, he didn't make films like this up until this movie.
I mean, he continued to do movies that were kind of outside the norm.
Yeah, the same year.
They were either kind of like smaller films or challenging films. And then this was his first huge, like, blockbuster role.
Yeah. Then he did Tequila Sunrise, which I like. You know, after he did, like, Lethal Weapon 2, he started doing kind of goofy-ass movies until he got into directing. I will say Hamlet was pretty cool when he did that, but stuff like Bird on a Wire.
I hated Bird on a Wire, but...
It's not a good movie.
If you listen to the... what is his name? Ned Ryerson.
Now, don't you tell me you don't remember me, because I sure as heck fire remember you.
Stephen Tobolowsky?
Yeah, Stephen Tobolowsky. His podcast that he does with David Chen from Slash Film, or did, I don't know if it's still going on, he tells some amazing stories in general, but his stories from the shooting of Bird on the Wire are hilarious. Like, so if you ever want to get, like, a whole idea of that era, the Gibson kind of goofy film era, mm-hmm. There's a great insight into that there.
And then he made Air America.
Yes.
Which I will watch. It's not a good movie.
It's in fact, it drags.
Yeah, it really does drag. And then Forever Young, which I would deem a chick flick, definitely.
Yeah, but wasn't Forever Young like a... I want to say it was a remake of something.
I don't know.
Or am I totally off base
it's
here?
It's a remake of a Rod Stewart song, I think.
Oh, okay, that's what it is.
And then later on, you know, he directed Man Without a Face and then did Maverick. And he was pretty much gone making... Until he did... What I mean by gone is he made films that were okay until he made Braveheart, I would guess.
Hamlet was pretty accomplished. Because he really brought that whole idea of Shakespeare into the I remember we would watch it in high school and just kind of be like blown away by it. None of us had any idea what was being said.
Right.
But then, like, yeah, Braveheart was, what, 94, 95?
95. And Hamlet was 1990.
That was kind of a wake-up call for everyone. Like, whoa, this guy has something here.
The scene where Riggs is suicidal and it looks like he's going to blow his brains out. I remember an interview with Franco Zeffirelli, who did Hamlet. You know,
yes.
He'd also done Romeo and Juliet. And he's a big Shakespeare buff, apparently. And he said when he watched that scene from Lethal Weapon, he said he is Hamlet. Right here he's saying to be or not to be. And he knew he wanted him to play Hamlet after he saw that scene.
Wow, that's cool.
And every time I watch that scene, I think Hamlet. He's saying, Riggs is saying to be or not to be.
Yeah, that is the eternal question.
Yeah. And let's go ahead and get into Lethal Weapon, Bill.
All right.
What do you say? Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell. When the movie starts, you know, you're thinking action movie or something. It's going to start with, like, something like that. But no, it's...
Well, even the font is that action movie font. Like, that big, bold, 3D lettering.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it doesn't seem like it should fit with the music.
Yeah, and it starts with the Christmas song. And little did we know that this would be a Shane Black staple, you know?
Yeah.
When this film was made, we didn't know at the time, but Shane Black was being wined and dined by Joel Silver, and he would...
Well, Joel Silver was his agent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Joel Silver was his agent, and he sent the script to Joel Silver, and then... They took it to Warner Brothers, and then they were like, I think you have something here. Let's work on it.
He's like, I love it. Let's make it. And then, you know, the rest is history with Shane Black. We, of course, get The Last Boy Scout, etc. Oh, I think after this, he made The Monster Squad, which I would have made, too, next.
With, Decker. What was his name?
Fred Decker.
Fred Decker. I wanted to say Fred Decker, but I just thought it was wrong.
So let's see. Lethal Weapon, Monster Squad, Lethal Weapon 2, Just Story, mm-hmm. and then Last Boy Scout, Last Action Hero
he did. Rewrite.
Longest Goodnight. Wow. So really,
Shane Black, born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
I'm guessing, Bill, that he made a lot of money off of the franchise Lethal Weapon, and he didn't have to work a lot.
Well, Lethal Weapon, he made $250,000.
But don't you think over time, because of the characters and everything throughout the franchise?
Oh, okay, yeah. He got like $125,000 as a co-writer of Lethal Weapon 2, because I know the original ending on 2, Riggs is killed, mm-hmm. and they changed it, so they rewrote it or something.
Of course, you can't kill off Riggs.
No, you can't kill franchise.
Yeah, don't kill franchise.
It says he got $1.75 million for Last Boy Scout and $1 million for his rewrite on Last Action Hero. So that's not bad for the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm. So when the movie starts, of course, it starts with that cool aerial shot of Los Angeles, and it zooms in on a nude woman, which my friend enjoyed a lot.
And my 8-year-old me really liked.
Were you like, damn, my 8-year-old?
Damn, she's fine. It was one of those moments where it was just like, wow, I feel funny.
Well, the scene turns really dark because this chick is in lingerie laying there naked, but then she's doing coke.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, what's going
on
here?
Man, she is stoned.
Okay, so it's like Jingle Bell Rock, the city. It's obvious Christmas time. You know, you see the Christmas lights and stuff. And then this chick doing coke. Where's this going? What's going on here? It's almost like TV shows now where they do the setup of a crime happening.
Yes.
And then the movie kicks into the gear. It's total like cop movie TV
show. It's
shows.
Procedural stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. It's a procedural. You know, we start out with the crime being committed.
Yeah, but I also have to just compliment him on the way the scene is set up, because I'm watching it just the other day, and just how that helicopter shot is steady, and then how dizzying it is around the apartment complex.
Yeah,
it circles once before it goes in on it, and it's really like it's discombobulating.
Yeah,
like it makes you uncomfortable before that zoom in.
The opening credits is like the helicopter's on its way to the building, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when it arrives and circles it and then zooms in, she's in there and then jumps off the balcony.
You think she's just kind of checking stuff out, and then she, like, you know, kind of like Jenny in Forrest Gump, and
I can fly.
Yeah, and then she just leaps. It's like, what the hell? That was a waste of a beautiful woman.
And then, you know, when we talk about Riggs in Lethal Weapon, the main character is Murtaugh. Am I right? He's the first guy who gets introduced. Him and his family.
Well, he's supposed to be the main character.
Yeah, he's retiring. And then what about when they bust in on his bath time, Bill?
That's it. I had to message you about how creepily uncomfortable that was. That there's just something about that scene.
Happy birthday.
When I was a kid, you didn't. Yeah, you don't go into the bathroom when your parents in a tub. That's just not normal.
Well, I could see the mom was like, "Okay, kids, come on, let's get in there."
I don't know. That's just you're afraid you're going to see something that you can't forget.
The whole setup is, you know, we know that it's his birthday and he's retiring soon, right?
Yes.
He's retiring soon in every movie, Bill.
He's retiring at 50, which is strange.
It is really strange.
Was retirement an early thing in the 80s?
Maybe it's a promise he made to his wife or something. I don't know.
Move on to another career, not really retire.
But they have the scene with his daughter, Rianne, where she's like,
you know what? Your beard's getting gray. Kind of makes you look old. But I mean, that's all right, though, because I still love you. Bye, Pop.
Then we have to have the... Yes. We can't forget to mention Michael Kamen, Eric Clapton, and David Sanborn.
Yes, the Sanborn sex. And the entire movie is a battle. It's like, if there's a fight, I was trying to figure out which character does the sax represent and which character does the guitar riff represent.
It's Eric Clapton versus David Sanborn in the movie.
Yeah, it's a constant fight. It's just, which one could be more loud and obnoxious than the other?
Yeah. And then the movie starts, you know, with Raj. We introduce him as Tool, and then it cuts to Riggs, and he's waking up naked in his bed.
After his bar brawl.
And I'll never forget this, being over at my grandparents, of all places, watching Lethal Weapon, and my grandma commenting on Mel Gibson's butt. I'll never forget it.
Yikes.
Yeah, she was just like, this is my favorite part. And I was just like, Grandma!
Grandma!
And it was just like, it was the first time I realized my grandma was a woman who was attracted to men.
Well, I guess I can respect that, but wow.
It's like, Grandma, oh my God, she actually likes nude men. Oh my God.
It's like the time I saw Indecent Proposal with my grandma, and she's like, this is a bad movie.
This is filthy.
This is filthy, dirty, and I love it.
But somehow I can't look away.
Look at all that money.
And then, you know, they have the scene where everybody's at the Murtaugh house, and Trish is cooking bacon. She's cooking a lot of bacon in the scene also, Bill.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, that's my bacon.
Well, it's mine now. Hey, don't you close doors around here?
Yes, they're a very pork-centered family, apparently.
What's funny is I think I've got to just focus on Lethal Weapon. Don't think about the other movies right now.
Okay.
But the whole Murtaugh in the morning and his wife kind of like just saying stuff. I guess it's realistic, you know?
No, it's not. It's not. I was going to say something. This is quite possibly one of the worst conceived scenes I've seen. Just because it comes across so phony. Like even Danny Glover's acting in it.
Baby, what's this on my tie?
That is an ugly spot.
Thanks. Sure.
I'm thinking of going on Jeopardy.
All right. Just don't take any questions about cooking.
Don't step in the egg.
Where's my thinking? I should have checked the floor for egg.
He just seems like he's a stranger in this house. Like it's not natural. Like it's not comfortable. It's an unsettling scene for some reason. Like, who is this man?
Alzheimer's might have set in.
It's possible. It just seems like everyone in the house is normal except him, because he's kind of got this jokey kind of, hey, is that bacon? That's my bacon. Oh, yeah. Michael Hunsaker.
Danny Glover does this talk acting, which I love. He narrates his own acting. And I love it, the way he does that. Is that, what do we got here? You know, he just kind of
talks. I haven't heard that name in 20 years. That
I love what he...
50!
Yeah, I love what he says. That would make me 50, which would make you... And she goes,
I haven't talked to him in 12 years. Huh. Well, no, wait a minute. That would make me... So that means that
we're not going to discuss that.
It's like, you guys are in the room alone, really?
Yeah.
No, your audience, you guys are watching the movie. Oh, okay.
I just don't know if this is like a kind of a very immature scripting or just a poor acting, or I can't decide which it is, but this scene just doesn't work that well.
I think they're working with the material.
Okay.
No, I got to be honest. The scene has never bothered me from watching it originally, but I think...
No, me neither.
I think it's like over time we watch it, it's just like, oh, geez, you know, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. And then, also, we got to mention that the director's cut of Lethal Weapon, that it has Riggs, for some reason, showing a scene where he kicks in his TV.
Remember that? Some commercial irritates the hell out of him, and does he kick the TV or throw a bottle at the TV?
Well, first he's like drinking beer. It's showing that he drinks beer, of course, before he goes to work. And I think it's a federated commercial. Remember that?
Yes.
Shadow Stevens played this character that sold stereos and stuff. And I think it's something like that. Yeah, he throws a bottle at the screen, which I don't think would smash it like that. But
no, and not knock it off. You remember how heavy those CRTs were in the 80s? Like, that's like a 13-inch CRT. Those things were beasts.
But wait, there's more. How much would you expect to pay for something like this?
And it's
like a 50-pound television.
And it's obvious why they cut the scene out of the movie, because it's not necessary. It shows him where he sees a picture of his wife and he goes, "I'll buy you a new one." It's better later on when they show the attempted suicide scene, because you get all you need from that one scene.
This scene is extraneous.
And
yeah,
then
it's not needed, because it brings up the point of the wife's death too early.
Yeah, and also it shows Rod going to the gun range. You don't need any of that. It's all
that's where he's holding out his hand.
Yeah, basically,
and then he
deleted scenes like this are neat for a movie that you've seen 100 times to see new stuff. You can understand when you watch it why they cut it out.
Yes.
You know? About the only cuts I've seen of movies that I'm like, ooh, I'm glad this is back in, are The Abyss and Aliens.
The Abyss is a totally different film.
Yeah,
the
Aliens.
The Abyss is essential.
If we want to talk. But also, in the director's cut, there's a really strange sniper scene where a guy is just shooting at people.
What do you got here?
Sniper, sir.
Sniper, what's he doing?
Shooting kids. One officer is down.
Yeah, the schoolyard scene.
Yeah, and how disturbing would that be this day and age? But this is back in the 80s. And
yeah, this was unheard of, or at least we didn't hear about it nationally.
And the scene is really strange.
But it's effective.
Yeah,
it's the first introduction in how reckless and suicidal Riggs is.
Yeah, he's willing to just walk into the line of fire. He doesn't care.
Hello? Mr. Sniper, sir! Get away! I'm still here, asshole. What do you only do, kid? Shut up!
And even all the cops are just like, this guy is freaking nuts. Like,
right.
They don't want anything to do with him.
But it's the same thing as we didn't really need it, because we get to see it later, how nuts he is.
Yes, that's true. It's doubling up on it.
And I didn't know this until later, that there were some people who didn't like the Lethal Weapon franchise, because it was like, they thought it was just lowest common denominator, like, oh, it's crazy cops. It's a movie with crazy cops. Ooh, you know, kind of a thing.
Well, you know what? I can see that, because I mentioned to you, like, in the 70s, the Alan Arkin, James Caan movie, Freebie and the Bean, is one of those movies. Like, the buddy cop, crazy cops thing. And there's scenes in Lethal Weapon that kind of harken back to that sort of film. And I think that those sort of films were always sort of kind of made fun of. You know, like, oh boy, they're doing a buddy cop movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think maybe there was a lack of respect there. Maybe that's kind of what Shane Black was playing off of.
Yeah, totally. Like, I always thought it was effective, and of course I'm a fan of the first Lethal Weapon. But I would say, like, when you watch that scene with the sniper, of course it shows that he's crazy, but he's also heroic. He guns the guy down. He's a bad man, right? But not necessary in the movie, right?
No, not at all.
Of course, when the movie first starts, Raj is hearing from his wife about Michael Hunsaker called him. And he's an old Vietnam buddy.
Do you know a man named Michael Hunsaker?
Michael Hunsaker.
Well, then, Roger goes to a crime scene, and Amanda Hunsaker has dove out the window, as Roger says.
Yes.
His daughter just dove out the window. It's like, dude, that is such a freaking huge coincidence, isn't it?
He's like, wait, what's her parents' names? Parents are Michael and Hunsaker. Like, oh.
And that scene, I'm not sure that scene is well acted either. You knew.
No. Well, and also they have Dixie the prostitute.
Yeah, I love that scene. All dressed up and no one to blow.
You're hilarious.
Yeah. And the movie is filled with those little, like, Shane Black moments that don't. It's like he hasn't perfected the one-liner yet.
Oh, come on.
He's just kind of like shoehorning it in.
That's the good line. That's hilarious. All dressed up and no one to blow.
Hey, screw you, buddy. Something like that. I know you remember what
she says. She goes,
Pete, you know how it is.
Sure. All dressed up and no one to blow.
You're hilarious. I can't believe it, Dan.
Oh, yes.
That scene works perfectly well, Bill. Okay?
Does it?
Yes!
Okay, I trust you. It does. You know, it's Danny Glover's delivery.
Why are you knocking Danny Glover? He's a master at it.
I just noticed that for some reason in this movie, he's very stiff.
He's a master debater.
Yes, he is.
Oh, wait, that's the wrong Lethal Weapon film.
I've lost track.
He calls wife Trisha. I'm going to need the number to Michael Hansager. His daughter just jumped out the window.
Give me the number for Michael Hansager.
The man we talked about?
What?
Vietnam fighter.
Yeah, yeah. You just mentioned him this morning.
What's wrong?
His daughter just dove out the window.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
I want to see a scene where she goes, that's crazy. He just called you out of the blue and now his daughter's dead? You know, when you think about it, I mean, I love this movie, but the movie is just all over the place.
It is. And that always happens with these. Whenever we go back and look at it, it's something we love.
We're like, wait, man, this movie is all freaking over the place. Do they ever do police work in this movie?
You know what? The only movie I can say that we really have covered that isn't all over the place is Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the only one that has truly held up in its consistency.
What I mean by all over the place also is when you think about it, okay, Roger doesn't have a partner right now. He goes to the crime scene, and it turns out that a friend of his that he hasn't spoken to since Vietnam's daughter just jumped off a ledge, right?
Yeah. Naked. Well, and yeah. She was a prostitute.
And so then all of a sudden he gets a new partner who's a crazy homicidal cop, and they don't ever have a scene where he fills them in on anything, is there?
Well, no, there isn't. And we have to discuss this. Immediately after this scene with Amanda Hunsaker, we go to the
Christmas tree lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's very strange. And then after the what would you call it? The gun battle with the hillbilly tree drug dealers?
Well, think about this. Okay, this scene is very funny with the it's a drug deal in a Christmas tree lot, okay?
Yes. And they're all wearing flannel. They're all dressed very warmly for LA.
Yeah, wearing denim and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a funny scene where Riggs are like, he goes, how much for all of it?
Okay, so let's do it. How much?
How much for how much?
For all of it.
You want it all?
Yep.
He wants it all.
Beautiful.
He starts counting out his money for $100. They're like, $100,000. And he's like, well, I don't have that kind of money on my salary.
Forget it, you dumb shit. $100,000.
Did you hear what he said?
$100,000? I'm sorry, I can't afford that. Not on my salary. But look, I tell you what, I got a better idea. Here. Let me say I take the whole stash off your hands for free, and you assholes can go to jail.
What do you say about that?
And then, you know, there's a guy behind him with the shotgun, and
he says, well, how about I take it all off your hands and arrest you, and he puts down the badge, and they're all like, you're not a real cop, man. You're not,
you're
all that
one
stuff.
Crazy
and then, of
son of a bitch.
I'm crazy. I'm going to do the Mo or the Larry. No, Mo, Larry, Curly. Curly, that's the one.
The guy goes,
this badge ain't real. You ain't real.
Oh, you sure are a crazy son of a bitch.
You think I'm crazy?
Yeah.
Are you calling me crazy? You think I'm crazy? Yeah. You want to see crazy? I'll tell you. Now that's a real badge. I'm a real cop, and this is a real fucking gun.
He's like, you think I'm crazy? Do you think, like, does he take offense when people call him crazy, you think?
No, it's like Marty McFly and chicken.
You call me chicken?
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, think about this, Bill. This incident happens. I'm guessing this is early morning, right? Because Raj just had breakfast and then he showed up at the same.
I'd like to think they're happening at the same time.
Right. So this shootout happens in this tree lot. He's rolling on the ground, shooting dudes. And then my favorite scene, I always loved this as a kid because I always wanted to see the hero do this, where someone holds a gun to your head and you're like, you know what? Shoot me. Come on. Do you have the balls? And he's like, shoot it. Shoot him. Shoot him.
I shoot him.
Drop it, prick.
Hey, shoot him.
What?
Shoot him. Shoot him.
Shut the fuck up. Somebody shoot this prick.
And then, you know, the guy doesn't have the nerve to do it, and Riggs calls him on it.
Totally psychs him out.
Yeah, and then he headbutts him or whatever. So, but think about it. Riggs, this after this incident where he's like, come on, shoot me, shoot me. They're like, okay, you're out of here. We're transferring you.
Yeah, and obviously, the fact that the backup wasn't, like, right there, was he off doing this on his own? Why did the backup just arrive after? There's one in the tree. It's like, wait, where were you?
I picture they were down the street.
Okay.
Just waiting for him.
All right.
But, come on, it's Riggs. He's got this handled, and then everything goes bad.
Yeah.
But then there's the scene where, you know, Riggs has the gun in the guy's head, and the guy goes, it ain't worth it, man. And he's all, like, all pissed up and hopped up and everything. I always thought that was effective, you know, when I first saw it. Like, it shows he's crazy. But then it leads into, it wasn't the same day. Okay, so it's nighttime. In the director's cut, it shows him coming home with a new TV.
Yes.
Which is funny. Totally not needed, but...
He said that he would get a new one.
I wonder if it's... I never noticed if it's a different TV. I wonder if anyone's like, hey, I noticed his TV changes in the movie. And it's like, he buys a new one.
It's the same... It's not a continuity error. It's just... It just happened.
But it's so funny that, you know, I like to point out product placement in movies. So far, the one thing I noticed is Winchell's Donuts in the background of the Christmas tree.
Yes.
You can see it just back. It's like, dude, Winchell's Donuts back there.
I remember when I got a TV for my basement, I took a picture, and you're like, hey, I see Winchell's Donuts.
Yep. Okay, now what follows is my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Okay.
Probably my entire scene in the franchise, which is Riggs drinking some beer and he's contemplating blowing his brains out, right?
Yes.
He's just, you know, we know now from the scene it's conveyed that he had a wife who's now dead, we assume. Remember, when we later on, after the scene, the movie tells us, because it has the psychiatrist saying that he just lost his wife of so-and-so years, he's on the edge, and all this stuff.
And she's right, of course, but throughout the entire films, demonized as the nutty one.
Yeah, I was like, did a Scientologist write this, where they want to make psychiatry look like pseudoscience? But in this scene, it's really powerful the way Mel Gibson plays it, you know?
Oh, it absolutely is. You can... It's so... It makes me wonder exactly what was really going on in his head to that sort of emotion on film, because it's incredibly effective.
I assume, just from watching the movie many times, is that he had attempted this many times.
I think you're right.
That he had contemplated and he'd sat there with his gun a lot, thinking about, hey, I could just end it. All I got to do is just pull the trigger and all the suffering I'm going through would be over.
I mean, we know that this man, Mel Gibson, has his fair share of demons.
Mm-hmm.
And has fought them. And he's said so in interviews that, you know, whenever a lot of stuff started coming out, that he has contemplated it. So this is, you know, it's more than just his ability to act. It's just that it's so raw and real that it just feels real. That's why it's so effective.
And the Michael Kamen score in the background. And then what I love even in the background is Bugs Bunny, like a Christmas special in the background.
Yeah.
I miss you. Much later.
Yeah, and seasonal depression is real. I mean, that's kind of a statement on that. That it's everything is so joyful, and yet when you're alone, it's horribly, horribly depressing.
Mm-hmm. That's what I love about this movie is the way it sets up Riggs as a character. You know, it's this dude who. We know he's a badass, but also he's a human being who's suffering right now.
Yeah. He's a lethal weapon who isn't afraid to do something, create the weapon against himself. Turn it against himself.
Well, there's like, his main problem at work also is everyone thinks a lot of people think he's pretending. Remember, what does the captain say? I've seen it before. They pretend so they get their psycho pension or whatever.
Are you telling me you think Riggs is playing some kind of a game?
Sure. He wants the cash. I've seen it 100 times, but he'll come around.
That's a very dangerous attitude to take, Captain. May I remind you that his wife of 11 years was recently killed in a car accident. He's also been known to pull his gun.
I know all about Riggs,
Doc. Not enough.
He's a tough bastard,
all right? He's on the edge, sir. I'm telling you, he may be psychotic.
Bunch of psych bullshit.
Really? Hey, well, you're making a mistake by keeping him in the field, okay?
Wow, that's really jaded.
I know. All we'd have to do is meet Riggs for a minute and know, okay, this guy's not pretending.
Yeah, why? I'd like to know why anybody would actually pretend to be damaged, especially after your wife was just killed in a car accident.
Right. That's my favorite scene in the movie. And then my next favorite scene is, damn it, Cooley. Silent yes. Night.
Once more with feeling on three. One letter. Damn it, Cooley.
Cooley just can never get his shit together.
Damn it, Cooley. So are they like carolers in the police
station? I don't know,
station?
But that old woman cop reminds me of every school teacher I ever had.
That old woman cop is actually in the next film, which is hilarious. If you notice.
Is she?
There's a part where Leo says some shit to her.
Oh, Leo Getz.
He's trying to get in the police station to see Riggs and Murtaugh. Or maybe it's the third one. I don't know. I've seen these movies too many times. They all blend
I know. They all blend together.
But this is the scene where the lady says,
"The man is suicidal."
And you're sure of that diagnosis? You have no doubts. You know that.
No, there are no absolutes in life.
End of discussion.
Not. It can't
We're going to wait.
We can't
wait. And
then
if he offs himself, then we'll know I was wrong.
You're making a mistake, because if you're wrong...
Excuse me, huh?
Asshole.
And, Bill, I want to point out that the male symbol is on the men's room, and it looks like it was just stuck on there for the film production. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah, well, he's walking into a hallway somewhere. But let's pretend this is a bathroom.
Well, why wouldn't men be okay, but it looks like they took the male symbol and stuck it on there, too.
Oh, I don't know.
Is it because in other parts of the world, other people know what that symbol means? They don't know what
that's probably.
Means.
Yeah, you're probably exactly right.
And then there's Roger talking to that guy. He's like, men in the 80s aren't tough.
Is that the... Oh, yeah, this is the... yeah. And yeah, I was trying to think, when does the guy from Die Hard come in? It's right after this, right?
Yeah, because the guy is talking about, last night I was home and in bed and I was crying. I cried in bed.
Last night, I cried in bed. How's that?
A mail bond.
Yeah, Gina, good holiday.
Were you with the woman? I was alone. Why do you think I was crying? Merry Christmas.
And then the other guy comes in from Agent Johnson, Special Agent Johnson. Mm-hmm. And he's
moving on up. He went from detective to Fed.
He's telling Roger that Amanda would have died in seconds had she not jumped. that it's actually murder.
Got some news on the Hunsicker case, Raj.
That was quick.
So was the autopsy. They're not calling it a suicide.
What?
Surprise, surprise. First off, coroner found evidence she used barbiturates.
Brilliant detective work. There were pills all over the place.
Right, right. That's not the surprise. Surprise is someone doctored the pills.
Jesus.
Every capsule was loaded with drain cleaner. If she hadn't jumped, she would have been dead inside 15 minutes.
This case stinks. Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, is it really murder? She did jump out the window. But someone poisoned her, okay? And in this scene, Riggs
and apparently
comes in.
She didn't have enough coke and pills in her.
It was Drano, right?
To not realize that she had been poisoned.
Right.
So she just killed herself instead of dying.
Because she was flying. Obviously, she was a miserable person for some reason.
Well, yeah. I mean, even in later on in the film, Roger discovers kind of a video.
Yeah.
And just kind of pauses on her face, and she's in this weird porno situation, and she just looks like dead inside.
Right. She does. And in this scene right here where Riggs arrives, he's obviously just been transferred, and he's just chilling, kind of sitting around, and then he pulls his gun out for no reason, Bill. What is he doing?
He was like cleaning it, checking the chamber, watching, you know, just
he's
doing
fidgeting.
Something that somebody that holds a weapon like that probably would do in a safe situation, like in a police quarters or something.
Yeah, I'm thinking that he's just fidgeting around. He doesn't know
he
what
is.
Else to do.
He is. I mean, that's essentially what he's doing.
But that's a great part where, Roger's like, gun! And, you know, he runs up to him, and of course, Riggs knocks him down, and he goes, meet your new partner. It's like,
Raj, meet your new partner.
Got a kick in the Eric Clapton there. But one of my favorite scenes is next, where their little repartee, where they're talking about Roger's like, the war is over, you know? And he's like, yes, I know.
Yeah.
I pulled your file. Said you worked in the Phoenix Project in Vietnam. Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Assassination stuff. It's over, you know.
What is?
The war.
Yes, I know.
Huh. Just thought I'd remind you.
He's like, that's quite a piece of hardware you're carrying.
It's like, what do you carry? Smith & Wesson? Yeah, a lot of old-timers carry those.
Oh, six-shooter, yeah. Yeah, the little... It's them getting to know one another. They're feeling each other out. Roger's old school. Martin's new school.
And he's saying that everyone thinks he's suicidal. Nobody wants to work with him.
Hey, look, friend, let's just cut the shit. Now, we both know why I was transferred. Everybody thinks I'm suicidal, in which case I'm fucked and nobody wants to work with me. Or they think I'm faking to draw a psycho pension, in which case I'm fucked and nobody wants to work with me. Basically, I'm fucked.
Guess what?
What?
I don't want to work with you.
Hey, don't.
Ain't got no choice. Looks like we both are fucked.
Terrific.
God hates me, that's what it is.
Hate him back, it works for me.
But they don't explain why they put him with Roger. Is it because Roger's retiring and they don't give a shit?
Pretty much. I think Roger isn't exactly respected.
Why wouldn't they respect Roger? Come on. The great
because he
Roger
has a daughter
Murtaugh.
That shows up in a condom commercial. In the
That's not
I don't
until
know.
The next movie, Bill.
I
and,
know.
And also in this film, they don't work with any other cops except at the police station. I think this is the last time they're at the police station in the whole movie.
Yeah, it is. That's it. They never see another cop.
Yeah, they're on their own. That's the way you work. It's kind of like Blade Runner, how Deckard just gets his assignment and then he's on his own the rest
and he's
of
off,
the week.
And he's off getting noodles.
Okay, Bill. Best scene ever setting up a bad guy. Ed O'Ross, the great Ed O'Ross that you may know from like Dick Tracy or Another 48 Hours, plays a drug dealer buying from the General McAllister and Mr.
Yeah.
Joshua.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mendez.
Yeah, how you doing?
Did you pat him down, Mr. Larch?
Oh, hey, man, we went through this act already. Go through it again.
Who are you?
That's hardly important, but if it matters, you may call me Mr. Joshua. Let's go.
Oh, great. Well, Mr. Joshua, huh?
Now, this scene is really ridiculous.
Yeah, it's in the general, he's just so, I don't know. There's something about him that I was like, he's just doesn't seem right. Like, he's just so, maybe he's right because he's so sleazy.
I think he's supposed to be very, like, he is very by the book. He does, he has no emotion. That's what it, he cut out emotion a long time ago.
Yeah, there's just something wrong about him.
And if I was going to meet this guy, I wouldn't act like this guy does. Where he goes, tell me I'm wrong. You guys are working with mercenaries, you know?
Where the hell did you get him? Psychos or us?
I don't think you're funny.
I don't think this whole goddamn setup's funny. You're using mercenaries, for Christ's sake. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong.
And you expect me to trust these fucking bozos?
My people are loyal, Mr. Mendez. They are loyal to me.
Oh, bullshit.
Yeah, you would not be calling out a man like this who can so deftly wear turtlenecks.
But I like, he's like, give me your lighter. My lighter? What do you want my lighter? Give me your lighter! And he's like, okay. He's like, come on, man. Oh, man. You guys gone, man.
I can't believe I just insulted you, man.
You know, you guys are out there like fucking Pluto, man. You're gone.
I love Mr. Joshua. He burns his arm on a flame to show what a badass he is. Wouldn't it be better if they just burned the other guy?
I don't know. Would that be effective as mentally effective?
It's showing
like,
right
I better
here,
not screw with these guys.
Yeah, this scene is showing that these guys, they cut pain out of the equation a long time ago, Bill.
Yeah, there's no pain.
No pain. These guys are robots. What I want to know is, obviously, Mr. Joshua probably gets paid well for his job. How does this guy enjoy himself in his office?
Yeah, I was
hours?
Just going to ask that. Like, he seems awful. You know, like, what does... I think he just goes home and turns off. Like, there's a switch on the back of his head like C-3PO. Because he's just spooky.
Right.
There's nothing. Yes. There is nothing going on there. The general is the puppet master.
And he's ordering a shipment of... I love when he goes... Are you placing your order? And he is like, yeah, Jesus Christ, yes.
Yes, please, take my order.
You wish to do business with us, yes?
Jesus Christ.
You wish to make a purchase, yes?
Yes, Jesus Christ, yes.
I'll take double, whatever it is. And you know what, for your trouble, add 10%.
And I love how General McAllister says, Merry Christmas. And the guy's like, Merry Christmas. Oh, we forgot when Riggs knocks him down. He's like, meet your new partner. We got our first ever.
I'm too old for this shit.
Oh, yes. How could we forget that?
That's the first one, Bill.
I'm too old for this shit.
The first of many.
The first of many. And then, oh, my God, we got to talk about the pimp, Tom Atkins, in the house.
Yeah, I was like, hey, look, I knew that guy.
Basically, if John Carpenter would have made Lethal Weapon, Tom Atkins would have been Martin Riggs.
Yes, he would have.
he would have. Totally. That's so funny. Tom Atkins was the leading man for John Carpenter. He was his Christian Bale, his Robert De Niro.
He was good.
And who would have been Murtaugh? It would have been like Donald Pleasance or something, you know.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. That would be horrific.
But, Lethal Weapon made in the 70s starring Tom Atkins and Donald Pleasance. I would see that movie, Bill.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Now, Tom Atkins worked with Fred Dekker in the Monster Squad.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So that was, what year was that?
That guy was always fantastic. That was like, the same year or
okay, I was wondering if it was before or after, and like was,
let's see, the Lethal Weapon 1987, Monster Squad 1987. Oh, we're thinking of Night of the Creeps.
Okay, Night of the Creeps. Yeah, that was
when the hell was that?
That was 86. I'm almost positive that was 86.
Okay.
So it would have had to have been over. I'm just trying to figure out the Decker Black connection.
Yeah.
Like, because I know that that Edo Ross is actually from Pittsburgh, and I was wondering if there was a connection there with Shane Black. Like, friends getting, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm always interested in how that works.
If you would think that'd be an exciting time, you're making this goofy movie with your friend, and all of a sudden he's like the toast of Hollywood, you know?
Yeah.
This huge movie. And this scene where Tom Atkins, obviously he's not letting on. He's pretending to be the his daughter was a victim of, drug abuse and being in porn.
Drug abuse and evil porn people.
I want you to find whoever's responsible for this. However many of them there are. Please, I know you can do it. Just find them and kill them.
Mike, I'm a police officer.
I don't give a shit. You're a police officer, Roger. I know you're a fucking police officer. Kill them! Just kill them!
Wait. Rog. Come on. You find them and you kill them. You can do that. You owe me.
Yeah, and he's basically telling Rog, kill them, Roger. Kill them!
They killed my little girl!
And I love that line where Riggs is like, well, why is he saying you owe him? He goes,
hey, what did he mean when he said you owed him?
We served together in 1965, the Drang Valley. Saved my life. Took a bayonet in the lungs.
Oh, that was nice of him.
Yeah, I thought so.
But what's funny is, in IMDb it mentions this, is that he talks about he took a bayonet in the lung in the Something Valley. And that battle is the battle that takes place in We Were Soldiers, starring Mel Gibson.
There you go.
And what it turns out is that later on, Michael Hunsaker talks about that they were working with Air America, which is another Mel Gibson movie.
I ended up working with a group called Air America, CIA front.
It's pretty cool.
Amazing how that stuff works out.
It is pretty cool. Okay, now I want to talk about...
what would have been great is if Tom Atkins was in Air America.
It should have been Shane Black penning it about Air America and Shadow Company.
Certainly would have been a lot better than it was.
I remember for the longest time that Shane Black talked about he wanted to do a movie called Shadow Company.
Oh, cool.
And that would have been badass. I'd love to read that script. Now, Bill, I want to talk about the suicide jumper scene.
Okay.
All right. I want to start off with...
This was the go-to advertising scene. It's like I said, it was on HBO. After, you know, how they would do those little interstitials between movies.
Mm-hmm.
It was always on in the late 80s, around 87, 80, you know, 88. Uh-huh. Constantly.
And this is funny, is I didn't know this for a long time, but IMDb, I saw it. A lot of people debated that the suicide jumper was Johnny the Boy from Mad Max. They were like, that's him, he goes uncredited. But if you look in the credits, they credit the guy, and it's a different guy. I can see that it's not the same actor, but a lot of people are like, that's Johnny the Boy from Mad Max. It's not.
No, I could tell that.
That's... But I do want to say this, though. This guy is the worst actor besides Huey Lewis in Die Hard. This guy's a terrible actor, Bill.
Leave me alone! Please leave me alone! Leave me alone!
Why are you doing this?
None of your goddamn business!
Fair enough. Look, I'm just gonna come out there, okay?
No! You touch me, I'm gonna jump!
Yeah, he's bad. If we thought that opening scene with Danny Glover was bad, this is worse.
This is bad.
You're crazy, man!
I didn't think that opening scene with Danny Glover was bad. How dare you?
Okay, I'm just stating my own opinion.
The world is just there for Roger Murtaugh to interact with.
To
and
partake
around.
In?
He's like in a video game, kind of feeling
I'm
around.
I'm
going
to take my bacon off of these girls coming up the steps. Press X to take bacon.
Yeah, it's like Grand Theft Auto 5. You're just playing as Murtaugh. You're in the family house.
You have taken the bacon. Achievement unlocked.
Now, would you think that Riggs would empathize with this guy more? That he's contemplating suicide and he's suicidal? But he's
Initially, yes.
But the guy is...
You have to think about Riggs in his own head. Like, I'm so tired of... I'm too old for this shit, basically. Like, I deal with this on my own level. I am not going to sympathize with some other dumb shit who should just put the bullet in his head.
And my favorite part is, like, I got my boss down there. He's watching.
Yeah.
Okay, now, come on.
So don't come near me!
Come on, give me a break. Will you, guy? My boss is down there, and he's watching me. So, you know, I got to make it look at least like I'm trying to save you, okay?
And honestly, he was in the right. I mean, they've got that massive pillow. Where does the guy think he's going to go?
Right.
There's a massive air pillow down below. If he does jump, he's not going to die.
Well, that's what's funny about this scene is the audience doesn't know that air pillow thing is down there yet.
Yeah.
We don't know until they hit it. So when the part where they jump, I remember watching this for the first time thinking, this isn't really happening. This can't
be
happening.
It's a dream.
Yeah, you totally get sucked into it. You're like, there's no way they're really jumping. But then it shows the air pillow thing at the bottom, you know? And then it's just like, oh, okay.
Now, see, I wish I could have experienced it like that. But because it was shown so many times.
Oh, you knew what was going to happen.
I knew there was an air pillow there when the movie came along. So I'm just like, this is not, you know, useful for me. This is doing nothing except showcasing that Martin Riggs is crazy enough to tell this guy, let's jump.
You know what I love most about this scene also is when he's like, screw you, man, I'm jumping. He's like, do you really want to jump?
Do you really want to jump? Do you want to? Well, then that's fine with me. Come on, let's do it, asshole.
Let's
do it.
I want to do it. I want to do it.
What do you mean?
Do you want me to ruin this scene for you forever, though?
Yes.
I don't know if you've ever noticed this. When they're starting to jump off in slow motion, have you ever noticed this?
That it's the stunt people?
The handcuffs break and they come loose.
I've never noticed that.
Right as they're slow-mo jumping off the ledge, the handcuffs immediately come apart. They break apart and then the two guys just hold hands as they jump.
They hold hands?
They kind of, like, they're improvising. Like, the handcuffs came loose, so they grab their hands real quick as they jump. And
aww,
then, of course, when they land,
adorable.
Mel Gibson and the other actor are handcuffed again. So,
So
I just ruined that scene forever for you. Sorry.
That, now I have to put it on and look at that. That's too funny.
Yep, handcuffs immediately break.
I have never, ever noticed that. Nice catch.
But I love, this is a great scene, too, when Murtaugh's super pissed off at Riggs for this. And he's like, do you want to die? You really are crazy. What do you want to hear, man?
Oh, what do you want to hear, man? Do you want to hear that sometimes I think about eating a bullet?
Huh?
Well, I do. I do. I even got a special one for the occasion with a hollow point. Look, make sure it blows the back of my goddamn head out. Do the job right. Every single day I wake up and I think of a reason not to do it. Every single day. You know why I don't do it? This is going to make you laugh. You know why I don't do it? The job. Doing the job. Now, that's the reason.
And I swear some of Mel Gibson's Aussie comes out in this.
Oh, it does. Yeah, it absolutely does.
He even has a hollow tip so he can blow out the back of his head. But this is a good scene. This is a really good scene.
It's a great scene.
He's talking about the one reason he doesn't do it is because of the job. He enjoys this work, right?
It's the only thing keeping him alive.
The only thing that keeps me going is this mullet I have.
I don't know, man. Is that a mullet or is that just like a helmet?
I don't know.
That
I
is it, because it's long on top and long in back. It's.
I mean, if it's cut around the ears, then I'd say it's a mullet. It is okay. A mullet. It's like a shaggy mullet.
It's a shaggy mullet. There
it's
you
like
go.
An 80s rocker kind of like
really
hair band.
It's basically party all over.
Yeah. But that scene where it looks like Riggs is about to blow his brains out with, why does Murtaugh go, okay, if you want to blow your brains out, here's my gun. Do it right now. It's like, what?
Yeah, take my gun. Don't nibble on the barrel. Pull the trigger. Go ahead, pal. Be my guest. Go ahead if you're serious.
You shouldn't tempt me, man.
Put it in your mouth. Bullet might go through your ear and not kill you.
Yeah, under the chin.
Yeah, under the chin.
Wait a second. His bullet won't fit in his gun.
Why does he tell him to blow his own brains out?
Probably because he's just exasperated. Like, let's just end it right now, please. I can't deal with this shit until I retire.
But I say this line all the time, and I say it to Heather is, I'm hungry. I'm going to get something to eat. Riggs says it.
I'm hungry. I'm going to go and get something to eat.
And then Roger, he's on a cell phone. Look at that cell phone.
No, that's not a cell phone.
What the,
that's a landline.
That's a briefcase.
And I remember those. Those came before those brick phones. I mean, that's My dad had one, and like I was fascinated by it.
It looks like a car battery is in that thing.
It is a car battery.
You're like lugging around a suitcase with a car battery in it.
And you can only get one call out of it.
Really?
No, I just remember it didn't last long at all.
Wow, look at that technology, man.
Like,
how much?
Maybe 20, 30 minutes. You always had to have it plugged into the car. Like, there were some of those that like actually had... They were directly wired into the car wire.
I remember the first thing I knew about like phones were like limos. Wow, that limo has a phone in it.
Yeah, and then you're like, do they have to plug it in somewhere?
I don't get it. Like, it's connected to a briefcase.
It's so far beyond our comprehension at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny. Like,
and that he has to make the call out of his car. Like, he gets out of the car, goes to the overpass, sets the phone up on next to the gate, and then makes the call.
Right, and if we want to talk about 80s, the part when Murtaugh is talking to Tom Atkins in the bank, the whole time they're in a bank. If you look in the background, Riggs is smoking a cigarette in the bank.
Yes. Not a problem.
This is the 80s. You could smoke in banks.
Yep. Secondhand smoke, pshaw.
And there's the part where they're in the car and, you know, after Roger's done talking to the therapist again, that's saying that, oh, yeah, this guy's nuts. You know, he just lost his wife. You never see Roger saying, I'm very sorry about your wife or anything. He never really acknowledges that.
Roger doesn't give a shit. Roger's an asshole.
He's just worried about right now having a scratch on him before he retires. That's
all he cares about is stealing bacon.
And isn't that funny, though, Bill, that this basically, this whole thing of, I'm going to retire soon, I need to live until my retirement, has been so, like, played upon after this. Like, in movies and stuff. Like,
it's funny how responsible Shane Black is a lot. For a lot of
the buddy cop thing.
It's
2 days from retirement.
Funny.
And you know, he's like, what does he say? I've been doing something since you were an itch in your daddy's pants.
I can't exactly remember it.
Well, don't worry. You know, I was driving before you were itching your daddy's pants.
I didn't know that.
And then the part where Riggs goes, I didn't know that. You think he's talking about an itch in his daddy's pants, but he's like, it's your birthday. Happy birthday to you. You know, sincerely.
I think he's talking about how itchy he is. I didn't know you're so itchy. I'm sorry.
Happy birthday for yesterday.
Yeah.
And then they go to this house. Okay, why do they go to this house? Do you know, Bill? This is right after the jumper. They get something to eat. He talks to the therapist, and they go straight to this Lifestyles of the Rich and Shameless.
I've seen this place on Lifestyles of the Rich and Shameless.
This is the
Amanda Sanger's pimp. And they're going to... Because now they're looking for her murderer.
Okay, yes. Yes, you're right.
So they go up here, and they see the... Oh, isn't this lovely? And there's these two chicks bagging coke. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hi,
boys, come on in.
Yeah.
Coke and boobs.
Yeah, that's okay. And then the guy just starts opening fire on them.
Yeah.
I swear that one chick looks like Joan Severance, too, in that scene.
Oh, Joan Severance.
I don't think it is her, though, but...
It probably isn't, but let me dream. Joan Severance in the 80s, hot damn.
And this scene, you know, they shoot the guy, and he's got a gun.
Falls in the pool.
He's got a gun, and he goes into a pool.
Whoopsie, there's plastic around him. We better get in there and get that plastic off of him.
The problem I've always had with this scene is just push him up out of the water first. Don't worry about the plastic. Just get him up out of the water, you know.
Yes, but he's shot. Like, what?
Yeah, he's going to die anyway.
He's going to die anyways. Let him, you know, die fresh.
Yeah, Riggs shoots him twice, doesn't he?
Yeah.
In the chest. That dude is dead.
Right to the chest. Yeah, exactly. Center mass.
They did him a favor, Bill, letting him die, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to save him. I mean, they're going to, you know, that's the shoot first, ask questions later philosophy they got going on there. Shoot him in the knees. I mean, it's established that Riggs is an incredible shot. You know, if you wanted to shoot the gun out of his hand, shoot the gun out of his hand.
Right.
You don't need to put two in his chest.
And I'm starting to think, you know what, like after this scene, Roger says, have you ever met anybody you didn't kill?
You ever met anybody you didn't kill?
Well, I haven't killed you yet.
Well, don't do me no favors.
Don't you worry.
And I was like, he hasn't killed anybody up until now, but he did kill, I guess, those guys at the tree lot, a couple of those guys, and he killed
Wait a second. Did he kill them, or did the guy with the shotgun kill them?
Yeah, the guy with the shotgun killed one of them.
Okay.
And then Rig shot him. Maybe he's just talking about what he's heard about the previous day or something. I don't know.
It's possible. They're just kind of establishing that Riggs is, a black cloud.
Yeah, he's had a few shootings recently, and
he shot a guy that was shooting up a school. So.
Yeah, he shot a sniper.
Yeah, but technically, he doesn't kill everyone he meets.
No,
because Murtaugh's still alive.
Yeah, he goes, I haven't killed you yet. Don't do me any favors. Yeah. Oh, Bill, Alka-Seltzer commercial. Alka-Seltzer.
So, when you go overboard at dinner, send Alka-Seltzer to the rescue and feel shipshape again fast.
Corner gave Spotty ride downtown.
Alka-Seltzer to the rescue.
Hey, you reminded me. That scene in Murtaugh's office, when the guy's talking to him about crying, he has a packet of Alka-Seltzer in his hand.
Uh-huh.
Because I was like, is he going to use that, or is he just going to hold it? Yeah, so there you go. That's the second Alka-Seltzer placement.
Ah, so they're pretty sneaky with that. It's not.
Yeah.
It's overly blatant when it fills the whole movie screen, I guess.
Well, I guess they needed it. Alka-Seltzer probably was like, well, if we're going to pay for this, we would like the commercial in it.
Yeah. Well,
because I was like, why didn't they use the, that's a spicy meatball, that sort of thing.
That scene at the pool, Riggs kept Roger from being shot, because the guy did pull the gun on Roger, and he was about to shoot him. So now Roger, he's kind of liking him. He even says, thanks for saving my life.
I'm so close to retirement. Thank you.
Look, sorry about all that shit I said out there. You saved my life. Thank you.
I'll bet that hurt to say.
You'll never know.
And he's like, well, I bet that hurt to say. I'm doing my Riggs impression there. And
I believed it. I thought that was, it was close.
He gets to meet Roger's family, huh?
Yeah.
I want to know this, Bill. What the hell are they eating for dessert? That tart thing? Will you get Officer Martin, get Mr. Riggs a tart? What is that, Bill?
Mr. Riggs, would you like that tart?
Thank you, yeah. Call me Martin.
Mr.
Riggs, sit down.
I don't know what it is. What is it? It's like an apple tart or something?
Yeah, I've tried to look many times watching this movie because, we've seen it a million times, like, saw it in the theater, saw it on VHS, then saw it on cable repeatedly. In fact, probably watched it repeatedly VHS recording from cable.
Yeah, it's like, care for a tart. Like, what kind of tart?
Yeah, what is it talking about?
Mm.
Oh, it's a meatloaf-like substance. You're being an asshole, Roger. How can he treat Darlene Love like that, Bill?
You know what, though? That's a perfect example of, like, the opening scene. Like, he was kind of, why didn't she call him out for being an asshole in that scene
earlier?
Like, the way he talks things through. You're right.
It's like, oh, we got meatloaf-like substance.
Hello, baby.
Hi, honey.
I want you to meet...
Daddy's new partner,
Martin Riggs.
Hi, how are you?
This is my wife, Trish. My new partner, Martin Riggs. Martin's going to join us for dinner.
Post okay with you?
What's for dinner? We'll see. What's for dinner? This is a Brown's chicken. Ouch!
It's roast.
How's a brown roast-like substance?
Roger, you're being an asshole.
I try not to be.
I think what we're witnessing is how Danny Glover flirts with women. He just acts really strange.
Or maybe he's just horribly uncomfortable around his own family. Like, he's just, he's never there, and he just doesn't know how to treat them.
Whoa, here's my little welcoming committee. Hi, where's my daughter? Which one's my daughter? Oh, this one's my daughter. This is my daughter.
Think about it. Murtaugh has actually died a long time ago. He's been replaced with an android.
Yeah, well, maybe it's kind of like, you know, Paul is dead, the Beatles. They just kind of found somebody who looked like him and threw him back in there. No one notices, but there's just something off.
What about this? Alien imposter.
That's what it is.
Uh-huh.
That's what the Lethal Weapon 5 is going to be.
Yeah, she says, Mr. Riggs, would you like a tart? And I'm trying to look at that box and see what the hell she's handing him.
It's Entenmann's.
They got it out of a freezer, I think.
It's an Entenmann's chart.
But, okay, most uncomfortable scene in the movie. My name is Carrie. I'm no fairy. My sister's Cherry. She's in love with this guy named Mutton.
My name is Carrie. I'm no fairy. My sister's Cherry. She's in love with this guy named Mutton.
Carrie. Nicholas.
Come on. It was for the good.
Is problem?
Okay, most uncomfortable scene ever, Bill?
Possibly.
No, the worst is when Danny Glover starts.
I'm going to find a father because my name is Roger, and I need to be a Roger, and a Sinkwood Hodger, and a Huda Hana Hana.
Do you need some help?
A Huna Hana Hina?
A Hina Hana Huna?
My name
is
Roger.
African American persuasion, but I've got no rhythm.
You need some help.
Yeah, well, that kid needs help. that's pretty bad.
My favorite is in the next movie. No, it's the third movie when she has pro-choice on her shirt.
Oh, boy.
I like when... Remember, the next movie, you know, they're against... I think... Is there an anti-apartheid sticker on
here? In Lethal Weapon 2, they have the whole thing about the Cougarans.
Well, they have the thing about tuna, too, remember? Don't eat the tuna.
So you can only eat white albacore tuna or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really strange political messaging going on in the films, like 2, 3, 4. You've got the immigration in 4.
Yeah, I don't mind the anti-apartheid stuff, but it's funny how it's like in this goofy...
But it's done in a jokey manner.
It's a goofy action movie, and they're throwing these things in there, you know?
Yeah, it's very strange.
And the scene on the boat where they're debating their... This is the first time they're finally talking about their case, Bill.
Yeah, this is... But it's also the scene where they finally... The ice breaks. This is the icebreaker.
Yeah. You mean a manhunt checker's murder, huh?
Did I mention that? I didn't mention that, did I?
You don't have to say a word. I can read your mind. Oh. I don't get it. What's the matter with you?
What?
Why is there a problem?
There's no problem.
We got one dead girl and one dead guy. The dead guy kills the dead girl. We kill the dead guy because he wants us to be a dead guy. It's pretty easy to me.
That's pretty easy for you to say.
This is where they're starting to feel one another out and get an idea of one another. And we also find out that Murtaugh's terrible with boats.
Yeah, Roger's saying the case is over. Basically, the pimp sugar daddy killed Amanda because she saw too much or whatever. She's dead. And, you know, Riggs is like, it's nothing's that simple. That's not what it is. And then he starts flipping switches on the boat, and he's like, you asshole!
Ship!
You okay?
Watch out! What about your man? What you doing? Where's my man?
Hey, man. Okay. Is this what you're looking for, Captain?
You asshole!
And then this is where they decide that maybe they should talk to Dixie.
Right. And, of course, we have to have the scene with Rianne talking about smoking pot in the house and how pot should be legal. And we now see that Riggs agrees that pot should be legal here, Bill.
Why can I have beer and I can't smoke a joint? It's not coke, you know.
Oh, okay, I'll tell you why. Because now, at this moment, beer is legal, grass ain't. Right or wrong?
It's wrong.
Right.
Right.
Yes, and there's a very creepy... This is where the creepy vibe starts between Rianne and Riggs.
Yeah, well, also at the dinner table, she kept just staring at him.
Yes. Well, I think whenever Riggs is offered a tart, they're actually offering Rianne. She's the tart.
Was it like a tart? He's like, I've never seen this dessert anywhere before. Where did you get this? Maybe it's one of those like bimbo type of the, you know, they have the Mexican desserts.
Oh, okay.
You know that brand?
Yes, I do. Kind of like that, what's the Mexican hot chocolate, Abuelita? It's always just slightly off.
Well,
maybe that's what, it's a Mexican tart.
You know, she says she wants to go out with this guy, the one with the dimples.
Yes.
I could see through his face when he smiles or something like that. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand.
Because dimples,
talking.
You know, it's not the fact that he's white. It's the fact that he has dimples.
Right. And
that's,
of course,
that's the bad thing.
It's weird that they would even mention this character we'll never see. Or is it? Maybe that means something later, Bill. Oh.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
But, of course, you know, I like the scene.
What's he look like? Let's talk about his facial features.
And that's a funny scene where he goes, well, I've learned a lot about you tonight. You don't know a lot about boats.
Yes.
Your wife doesn't know how to cook, but you got a nice family or whatever. But one of my favorite lines ever, Bill, he goes, you know, he basically tells him the only thing he's ever done right is kill dudes, basically. Like, he's good at it.
Yeah.
He once shot a guy in Laos, Bill.
When I was 19, I did a guy in Laos from 1,000 yards out. A rifle shot in high wind. Maybe 8 or even 10 guys in the world could have made that shot. It's the only thing I was ever good at.
We quote that line anytime we play a battlefield type game.
I once shot a guy in Laos.
We always try to replicate that.
Oh, he says, I did a guy in Laos from 1,000 yards out, a rifle shot in high wind.
That guy's he's a death machine.
And he says, maybe 8, maybe 10 guys in the world could have made that shot. It's the only thing I've ever been good at. So basically, we know that Riggs, hey, he's really good at killing people.
Yeah, and he should be proud of that.
He's a really good shot. Expert marksman. Doesn't he know he could go to those competitions and stuff and, like, get some accolades?
There you go. Yeah, he could be one of those, you know, super shooters.
Before they go visit Dixie, though, Bill, you know where they need to go? The gun range.
Yes. Now we're getting into the let's work it through scene.
Well, before that, they have to have the scene where it's actually pretty funny where Riggs wakes up.
Yes.
Let's not forget about... is this in the director's cut? Is this where he goes to pick up the prostitute? Yeah, it is.
That night.
This is... I can understand why this scene is cut, because it's really weird how... Basically, Riggs goes in the rain. He's driving, looking for somebody, and he picks up a prostitute. And he's like, how old are you? And she's like, does it matter? And he goes, the younger, the better. And that's really creepy when he says that.
How old are you?
22.
Bullshit.
Why, you like him younger?
Yeah, younger the better. How old are you?
16. $100. What'd you have in mind?
Well, I want you to come home and watch television with me.
That's all?
Yeah, Three Stooges are on in about 20 minutes, you know.
Are you serious?
Sure, I'm serious.
Well, you know what? I thought this scene was quite effective because he just left this familial situation. He's feeling a little extra lonely. I've always thought whenever he said the younger the better, he was talking more in a maturity sense. Because then whenever he finally does get to they're watching the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
So like maybe he's saying that in like,
see, that's the punchline to the scene, but before that
initially
happens,
yes, creepy.
You're like, holy shit, he's picking up a young prostitute. This Riggs just took a weird turn here, right?
Yeah, and that's probably why they cut it, but it's one of those scenes that I always loved because it showcases just how desperately lonely he is.
Yeah, and he says the Three Stooges are on in 20 minutes. This is before DVRs, Bill, but they did have VCRs.
Had VCRs, but they were really shitty.
Yeah. So
no one, for some reason, no one could actually set them to record anything.
But also, I would say this. They don't ever show them watching the Three Stooges, so I could say this. Like, even though he says that, that could be code for he's really going to bang her, too. Yeah. So he's going to have
sex. Well, why not? If you're taking her back, why not watch the Three Stooges and get, you know, get a little
salt? But he just asked for her to be 16, to be young, so it's just... I can see why they were like, you know what, let's just cut the scene. People might think that
we're trying to build sympathy for the character, not make him look like a creep.
Yeah, we don't want him people thinking he might possibly have sex with a 16-year-old prostitute. I think we should cut that out.
Yeah, you're probably right.
The scene where Riggs is looking at the Amanda Hunsaker like yearbook, and then the video of the it's not really a dirty porn when you say it's very easily cable.
Yeah, it looks like the sort of thing that some creepy rich guy would pay for. Like, I just want to see a bunch of
girls
taking a shower together. Yeah.
It would be really awkward if Trish came downstairs right now while he was watching that. Roger, what are you doing? You know I like to watch these with you. What are you doing? But that scene is really good. Danny Glover's look on his face, you know he's not, like, titillated by this at all. He's, like, disturbed by it. Because this girl was used and abused, and now she's dead.
Well, and this is... I don't know, he probably never met the daughter, but, you know, he personally knows the father, and he's probably, you would have to think that he's thinking of his own daughter.
Yeah, thinking of Rhiannon. I mean, class of 83, she's like out of high school, what, this is 87?
4 years, yeah.
Yeah, my God. I could easily, the world eats them up, you know, and spits them out. And he owns a Mitsubishi TV, Bill.
You know what? Those were the best in the 80s. The Mitsubishi tubes, those were the high end.
All right, Bill, I want to give you a trivia question here. What is the name of the Murtaugh family's cat?
Stinky.
Think of where they live.
You know what? It's totally slipping my mind.
Get out of here, Burbank.
Burbank. Holy shit, you're right.
Burbank.
I don't know why that never clicked with me. And when you say it, I totally see it, but I just don't.
Because the next scene, it opens up with Roger asleep, and the cat's like right on his chest in his face.
Yeah.
He's like,
And that happens, and it's so funny because that, anybody that owns a cat.
Knows that happens, yeah.
Yes, that is just quintessential cat behavior. Like,
unfortunately,
I'm just going to lay here until you wake up and feed me.
What was the name of that hooker who witnessed the shot?
Come on, you let me go to sleep.
No, come on, we got to get up and catch bad guys today.
Okay. You know, I'll go be real policemen. I'll get a shower.
Yeah.
A shower.
What was the name of that hooker? You know, the one that witnessed the jump?
I said I'd
get a shower. Wilshire Vice says Century City is not a usual turf.
Dixie, her name is Dixie. Give me that cup. And get out of here!
So when they go to the gun range to talk about the case, and they're basically saying, okay, what if Amanda wasn't alone? She was in bed with somebody, maybe Dixie. And I laugh at this now when I noticed it, is that Riggs goes, okay, disgusting, but okay. I'm like, whoa. Riggs is totally thinks that lesbians are disgusting.
Someone was in bed with Amanda Hamsack the night she
died. Right up till now, we assumed.
Okay, suppose it was Dixie.
Okay, disgusting, but okay.
He's one of those dudes, you know.
Yeah, it's just really, it's such an offhanded comment that it's like, wait, two women together are beautiful. Why would you think that's disgusting?
Well, Raj, I don't know if you've read the Holy Bible or not, but it says that, and they're like, oh my God, Riggs is totally one of those people.
Yet he picks up 16-year-old prostitutes.
Yeah, he's such a conundrum, man. But this whole scene is hilarious because it shows, of course, we know that Riggs is a badass, and he's shooting, and he's like, what, do you sleep with that thing under the pillow? And then he does that, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Have a nice day.
Okay, step aside, old man.
But we also see that Roger is a really good shot if he fires one shot.
One shot.
Yeah.
But that he can calm himself and get that shit in line and bam!
Cinnamon!
So basically, what I figured out is that Murtaugh would be pretty good in The Walking Dead. He could get those headshots in. But he would have to holster his weapon after each shot and crack his neck again, and then he'd do it again. Then he'd have to put it back and holster it. Do you agree?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's essential. That's about the only way that can happen.
So basically, officer, I saw the whole thing.
Oh, yes, this is they're discussing the Dixie thing, and they're like, this is really thin. They're like, yeah, this is really thin, but, and then what does Rick say? Thin's my middle name, or Murtaugh? One of them says it.
So she grabs the nearest flat foot she can find, and she says, officer, I saw the whole thing.
Right. Ah, that's pretty fucking thin.
That's very thin.
Now, what the hell? Thin's my middle name.
Yeah, your wife's cooking, I'm not surprised. Nothing.
It should be with your wife's cooking.
Yes, there you go.
Comments beautiful. Like that will not get you invited over for Christmas dinner.
My luck's changing for the better every day.
But our favorite scene, you know, they... You're gonna bust, Dixie.
Shh, it's okay. Don't go there.
Now, we're just gonna go have breakfast.
You're gonna have sex with her.
You're gonna bust, Dixie.
Are you gonna bust, Dixie?
Well, no, we're just going over there for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, we're going over here to have breakfast.
You're gonna bust Dixie. You're gonna bust Dixie. You're gonna bust Dixie. You're gonna bust Dixie.
Are you her pimp? You're gonna beat up Dixie. That would be more disturbing.
Oh my god.
You're gonna send her to the hospital again? Oh my god.
You're gonna bust her kneecaps.
You're going to hurt her again and send policemen? It's like, oh my god, kids.
Cops are evil.
It's so disturbing. But I'm going to ask you this. Are these child actors, are they good actors, Bill?
No, they're awful.
They are terrible.
They're so bad.
They're terrible.
They've got to be like the kids of people on set. I would love to look that up and see who those kids are.
Yeah, like, okay, that's Danny Glover's nephew and the prop guy's son. And
this is the Grip's little
boy. What are the sunglasses that Riggs is wearing in the scene when they arrive?
Yeah.
He never wears them again, but it's this weird scene. These goofy-ass glasses.
And then the one kid looks like Dorian from Almost Human, just a mini-size version of him.
And then the house blows up and all that. And okay, we already we determined that Riggs doesn't like gays. When Roger's trying to pat the flames out on him, Bill, he goes, "What are you, a fag?
You
hurt
so bad."
So we know
another offhanded comment that's just incredibly alienating.
Yeah,
it's like,
first of all, would you joke around like that if you were like 12 feet from a bomb that just went off, a house blew up, and you're joking around about fags?
Would you joke around about that at all? I mean, that's let's forget the fact that the house just blew up and someone's trying to put a fire out on you.
What are you, a fag?
I don't know, the more progressive era that we live in, or just the fact that we care about people's feelings more. I don't know, but it's one of those things that the moment you mentioned it to me and I watched it, I like cringe, like, oh.
Yeah,
no.
I do too now. It's funny.
No.
Like when I was in high school, dude, you heard that word fag like every day, you know, in the hallway, people calling each other fag, oh, you fag, or whatever. But, it's funny
and
watching
it now.
And
I know in the UK it's cigarette, or, you know, it's fine. But
what are you,
here,
a cigarette?
It just sounds very, very vulgar to me now.
Yeah, it does. And Riggs is way into mercury switches, Bill.
Oh, yeah, he knows this shit.
Oh, this is artwork. This is goddamn artwork.
Well, I'm glad you like it.
No, you don't get it. This is real pro stuff. I haven't seen anything like this since the war.
Come again. Come on.
Now, the CIA, they used to hire mercs. They use the exact same setup. Mercury switches. Kaflooey, that's hippie shit.
This is artwork, Raj. I'm glad you appreciate it.
No, you don't understand, man. This is special forces.
This is stuff that I would have used.
Now, okay, most painful scene in the movie for me whenever I watch it is Roger trying to talk to the little kids.
Here's the little fellow that saw the guy.
Hi. My name is Detective Murtaugh. What's yours?
Don't tell him your name.
Don't tell him your name. Was going to put you in jail.
And you won't see your mom.
No. It's all right. I'm not going to put you in jail. Come on. What's your name?
No.
Don't tell me name, Alfred.
Alfred. Oh, this is Alfred. Hey, meet Alfred. This is Alfred. Alfred, hi.
It was paint.
Paint? I was always paint. Like, did he paint. Say is it was paint. It was pain?
Paint.
It was tattoo. Paint?
Tattoo. There's no way I would have ever figured out he was talking about a tattoo.
No. In what world is paint? I mean, ink.
It was pain.
Pain?
Paint?
Pain.
I don't know.
Pain. But painted.
Mm-hmm.
Painted. Tattoo.
It was, I would go along with that, but paint?
I want to know what 3D movie that one kid had just seen. Friday the 13th 3D, maybe? Something like that?
You know, it's kind of like those HD vision glasses they sell on TV with the lady that goes, oh, it's like a high definition.
Don't tell him your name, Alfred. Alfred! Alfred, hey! This is Alfred!
Hey,
Do you shoot black people?
All the time, Alfred.
But it does crack me up, and he goes, I bet you like GoBots.
I bet you like GoBots.
Psy-Kill's my favorite.
I love Psy-Kill. You ever seen that YouTube video? It looks like he's having sex. It's like, wait, Roger, no YouTube yet.
Oh, yes. Look, did you just get back from Battle of the Rock Lords?
Yeah, it was 3D, Mr. Awesome. Battle of the Rock Lords.
Great, Roger. Put an APB.
Have we ever
on a
figured
picture.
Out what the challenge was of the GoBots?
Psy-Kill.
Why are they so challenged?
What did he look like? Was he black? No. Was he white? Uh huh.
Was he black?
Mm-mm.
Was he white?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was white. Okay. Was he tall? Oh, tall like me? What color was his hair? Was it brown? Black? Blonde.
Mm-hmm.
Blonde. His hair was blonde.
Was he, dear, black hair? Uh-uh. Blonde. Uh-huh. It's like, God, just...
Just tell us what he is.
I like when... Riggs kind of walks over and turns where his arm faces him properly for the scene. It was pain. It was what?
It was pain.
Wait, what?
It was pain.
What is he saying? I don't know.
No idea what the hell you're saying, kid.
It was pain.
Pain.
Take the cotton balls out of your mouth.
What are you saying, kid?
You think you're Marlon Brando.
It was pain. Give this kid a friggin' pencil and write the word down.
Can somebody get a speech pathologist over here?
P-A-Y-N. What is it? Pain? It was pain? Pain! Like that. Oh, tattooed! Pain? I don't know.
It was that.
That's a special forces tattoo, Raj.
All of a sudden he's turning into Sylvester Stallone.
I don't know. Like Popeye. Tattooed. No. No, like that. I'm right there. That guy right in front of me has the same exact tattoo.
What a coinky dink.
Roger's a special forces tattoo.
Roger, that's a special forces tattoo.
Mercury switches, special forces tattoos, pain. That's pain.
That sounded like Dolph Lundgren.
I'll think about it. Think about it. I will break you.
So basically, someone hired Dixie to poison Amanda, and now before the cops can talk to her, they blow up her house. Wow, that's some hardcore shit there, man.
Hey, we're dealing with serious people here. Yeah,
Mercury switches, Bill.
Yeah, this is special forces stuff.
You know what the movie really needs at this point? More Tom Atkins, am I right?
Yeah, please. We need the Hunsaker connection made here.
How tacky is it for them to assassinate the dude at his daughter's, like, memorial or whatever it is?
And this is one of those moments for me that's like, wow, that is the most awesome helicopter ever. That it can literally approach the house without any sound.
Yeah, basically, it flies on ocean level.
It just, like, appears.
Yeah.
Yet Riggs is looking out at the ocean.
This scene where Tom Atkins really tells him, Michael Hunsaker tells him that what he's really doing.
He works for the bank company.
He's great at faking tax records and all that.
I was with a special unit called Shadow Company. Mercs trained killers. When Charlie was bringing in heroin to finance the BC government, Shadow Company went in. We burned the whole thing down. We killed everybody. We also formed a plan.
Keep talking.
A couple of years ago, Shadow Company got together again. The war was over. But we still had our list of sources in Asia.
And
we've been bringing it in ever since.
Bringing in what?
Heroin.
They need him. They can't hurt him. So they killed his daughter. He wanted out. And he basically says, I have another daughter. He's not going to do anything at this point. But Roger, he says, I'm going to burn it down.
I'm going to burn it all down.
You can't do it, Roger. Too big, Roger.
Not anymore. I'm going to burn it down.
And what's sad is Tom Atkins never gets to take that drink of eggnog.
I know, man. He's just kind of holding it, and he's ready to savor that milky, creamy eggness.
He's just about to take the...
And then Mr. Joshua shows up with his beautiful round sunglasses.
There's a nice shelf of vinyl in the background in this scene. I don't know if you've ever noticed it.
No, I haven't. Are they pieces of vinyl?
There's a bunch of records, bunch of pieces of vinyl, and a turntable right there. And there's a cassette deck.
Oh, you know those are coming back now.
But if you notice in this scene, there's like about 50 half gallons of eggnog. Like on a table.
Well, he loves eggnog.
It's like, Raj, I'm going to forget the heroin business. I'm in eggnog now.
You know what, Raj? I'm trying to clog my arteries. I'll kill myself before they kill me.
So basically, Shadow Company gets 2 shipments of heroin a year. Oh, it's Party Nog also.
Oh.
Party Nog.
Party.
I know if I get any kind of eggnog during Christmas, it's Party Nog.
Well, that's because it's the best. I mean, you just can't beat Party Nog. It has that right mixture of viscous disgustingness mixed with rum.
Yeah, I'm curious. Do you ever drink eggnog?
I got eggnog just recently. In fact, I took a picture of it on my Instagram because, that's what people do now is they post asinine pictures self-indulgently. And it was the real stuff from this dairy up the road from me. And I took one drink of it, and it's just so, like, nutmeggy and thick and fattening that I couldn't take it. Like, it's just real eggnog is hardcore. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not, they say, like, Thanksgiving is a meal. Eggnog's a meal. Like, you feel ill after drinking, like, a cup of it. So I could never really do the eggnog thing, especially now. It's just too much.
I like when Hunsaker gets shot. He gets shot right through the eggnog carton, so the milk leaks out.
Well, you know what? If he can't have it, no one can.
You got off easy, you son of a bitch.
You got off easy, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, wait. Now, all of a sudden, he's insulting this man that
took a lung
took
for
a bullet
him.
For him. He now, got involved in something that he couldn't avoid. And he's all of a sudden calling him a son of a bitch. Screw you, Murtaugh. You high and mighty
It's
bastard.
The guy's final moment alive on this earth, and he gets called a son of a bitch.
Yeah,
not
really.
Nice.
He really needed that. You're a prick.
He could have said, don't worry, I'll protect your younger daughter or something.
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry, I'll make sure your daughter doesn't get hurt or your wife.
Now, let me ask you this, Bill. The scene where the helicopter flies by and Riggs unloads a clip on it, and then when it's real far away, he's still shooting at it.
Yeah.
Is he just wasting bullets there?
Well, I'm sure he knows he's wasting bullets, but, you know, it's not exactly like bullets are in short supply. He's taking chance to, you know, make a shot, hit something, hit someone, anyone.
I just want people to know I'm not being serious. I'm making a joke on IMDb. If you go in what do they call it? The
message boards.
The message boards.
Like, you scroll down to the bottom of it, and then there's questions and threads. And
people ask inane questions, and one of them is, why does Riggs keep firing at the helicopter? He's just wasting bullets. And someone's like, well, you see, it's a way for the film to show you that he's a badass and he doesn't quit. Because, you know, Riggs even says, are you finished? And he goes, I haven't even started.
Drew, I haven't even started.
Pretty awesome.
Well, you know, it's kind of like when Johnny Utah can't pull the trigger on...
he just fires in the air.
Yeah, on Patrick, he just fires in the air.
Dude, when I was a kid and they show, or 16 or whatever, they show Riggs firing at that helicopter, like unloading, I thought it was completely badass.
Yeah, absolutely, it's badass.
Just unload it. I wanted this in movies all the time where dudes just empty clips and shit, you know, not just two shots.
Let's just talk about the fact that he's got this badass gun and he's fire. Who wouldn't want to do that? Would you not want to go to a gun range just to try that one time?
Just unload as quick as you can.
Yeah. In fact, next time I come down there, you, Steven, and I, because Steven's the gun nut, gun range. Cheating. Let's just be, we'll be Riggs. We'll fire at helicopters.
In high
winds. Yeah, he's a badass. Let him, you know, it's like you said. Murtaugh says, are you done?
I wanted to bring this up too, Bill. But they've established in the film that Riggs can shoot a dude from 1,000 yards.
Yes, but with a rifle.
But when he's shooting at that helicopter, I know in my head he's hitting that helicopter. I know he is. It's not doing any damage, but he's that good a shot.
Well, yeah, it's a 9mm. It's not going to do anything.
It's going, pow, 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 pow. But yeah, I believe that he can hit that. Like,
I bet he can.
But next we have the scene where Riggs is talking to a prostitute. Okay, why is he doing this in this scene? After Hunsacker got killed and all this, shouldn't they go back to their captain or something? But instead, they go on the street and he goes, do you know this girl? She was in your line of work. Her name's Dixie. They already know Dixie's dead. Why is he out on the street doing this, Bill?
Hi.
Hi.
What's a nice Irish girl like you doing out here tonight? Hey, listen, I'm looking for a guy. Had this girl in his stable. You know this girl?
No, I never seen her before.
Dixie, she's in your line of work, you sure?
I don't know. This is one of those scenes that, it just feels like something was cut. Like, it just jumps from someone getting killed to now them
out on the street. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, and maybe it was... I mean, there's a little scene there as the helicopter's flying away, and, you know, they say that, you know, Hunsacker's dead, but there's still a problem, you know, all that. I mean, I guess that's what's setting up next, but it just doesn't feel is right.
What could they gain from finding a prostitute who knew Dixie? Maybe ask them, like, okay, oh, yeah, I know her. Well, this guy hired her. Do you know who that guy is? I don't understand what the point of this is.
I think that's what it is. Is they're just kind of...
They're trying to track the guys down somehow.
I mean, they're trying to find the connection. Like, who are these guys? If they knew Dixie, if they knew... Maybe there's a connection, like the prostitutes.
There's a place where you pick up the prostitutes or something.
They're grabbing at straws here.
And then Mr. Joshua guns down Riggs in this awesome shotgun scene. First of all, he asked the prostitute, what's a nice Irish girl like you doing in a place like this? But when he gets shot, he's in midair. Then it cuts to Roger reacting and like hauling ass over there. And then it cuts back to him still falling in slow motion. I think that cut is hilarious because it's like he hangs in the air for a second, shows the car drive off real quick, and then and back to him falling.
There's a couple of those where it makes you wonder, is that Stuart Baird, the editor, or is that Donner?
I think like, it's just like a cool, stylish thing or something. I have no idea.
Stylish in the way that Donner really doesn't have a style?
Well, he's freezing time there, is I think what
okay.
it is.
All right. It's a, like a Max Payne-y kind of thing?
Yes. It's bullet time. Before he knew what bullet time was, he wasn't... It's like he had it at the tips of his fingers, but he wasn't sure what he was doing.
Yes.
So it was like an idea, a scratch.
Well, Riggs is caught in like this death time, and Murtaugh is caught in real time.
Oh my god, I just thought of something. He actually died in one timeline, and that freeze in time, they put the vest on him.
Ah, it's the Observers.
Yeah, so now his life has been saved.
There you go.
And I like how Riggs is like dead on the ground for a second, then he wakes up like, you know, he's like, just snap just... back to
Come on, you son of a bitch, that hurts.
Oh, I'm pissed, Roger. Now I'm pissed.
It knocked the breath out of him, so he had to get it back.
But the whole thing, he goes, that was that same albino jackrabbit son of a bitch that did Hunsacker.
That's such a great delivery, too.
Yeah, that's so the way that he sets that up and...
Oh, shit, Roger. What? The guy who shot me. The guy who shot me.
Yeah, what about?
Same albino jackrabbit son of a bitch that did Hunsaker.
You sure?
I'm sure, man. I never forget an asshole.
He's like, Raj, they think I'm a corpse. And I never understood what he was saying for the longest time in the line where he goes, we could do shaving ads. And I go, he's doing what? It wasn't until, like, recently that I could closed caption it or I thought to.
Uh-huh.
And what he's saying is, we, you know, we bust these guys and all that. We can do shaving ads, like Gillette razor ads.
And you know something else?
What?
We do this right.
We get famous, do shaving ads and shit, girls, money. Sure, with our luck, we're doing Forest Lawn commercials.
Bullshit, we got the Edge coaches.
Edge?
Roger, they think I'm dead. I'm a corpse.
That's what he's saying, but I couldn't understand him for years.
Oh.
Could you? Have you ever know?
Yeah, I never quite understood that.
Because we can do shaving ads and shit. How would we go, they could do what? And I'd be like, it's pint. It's like, what? What the hell is he saying there? But
they really didn't do the ADR or the mics very well on this.
Yeah. So what he's saying is, once they save the day and it's all over, they're going to be doing shaving ads.
Yes.
He should have said, we'll be doing Gillette razor ads, and then wink at the camera like, ding, one of our sponsors.
I never leave home without it. And then it's just like, oh,
and
man.
Then I'm going to take it out, Alka-Seltzer, and head on to Winchell's Donuts.
Yes.
They could do something like that.
Because it's very fatty. I've got to have that Alka-Seltzer to cut through it.
So now they think Riggs is dead, and they're like, Roger, you think I'm a corpse. We have the advantage. But then they get a call, Bill, over to dispatch. And there's, I guess, a shooting, and someone's dead in his near his home.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, oh, he's probably a blonde kid with pits in his face. How'd you know that, Sarge?
Yeah, sure. He's probably blonde with big dimples.
How'd you know that, Sarge? Over.
Do you think they really...
How'd the dispatcher know that?
Who would describe, yeah, we got a dead kid here. He's dead kid, white. Oh, and he has pits in his face.
He had god-awful acne. I think it's Robert Davi's son.
Yeah. Does he have dimples? Does he have pits? What? But it's that scene where he goes, he probably has pits in his face. How'd you know that, Sarge? It's just like, what? You know?
And that also kind of sets up a thing that's used throughout the film series is the kind of dispatcher dialogue.
Yeah.
That's just, yeah, it's strange.
Well, also that Roger barely knows the girls that his daughter dates either.
Yes.
The boys that his daughter dates, you know.
No, I'd like to think it's girls.
Yeah, that would be cooler.
Rianne, except, you know, Rianne's
Dude, kind of strange. Riggs would not be into that. That's disgusting.
No, that's a deal breaker.
He'd be like, that's disgusting. She's going to hell, Raj.
Okay, disgusting, but okay.
She needs to come to my church.
My church of subgenius. Dude, what?
What? Who?
So, okay, let me ask you this, Bill. After the scene, they've just made an attempt on Riggs' life.
Yes.
They know that the girl that his daughter is dating has been killed.
The girl that his daughter is dating, yes.
The boy that the daughter is dating that has
Pit
dimples.
Face.
Yeah. Why haven't they called the chief? Why haven't they sent other cops out there? Why are
You know what? They don't need to. They're, you know, they're lethal weapons.
They're dynamite. Psycho nut cops.
They're loners, Dottie. They're rebels.
They're crazy cops. They don't need help.
No.
They've got this. See, it says
until the last minute. That's when they need the help.
Now, I didn't notice this till recently either. They have a ransom note. And the note says, your daughter looks pretty good naked.
Yes.
That's a good way to make a father kind of upset, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think they pushed the right buttons there.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't put it past any of those guys to actually indulge in that. So that's pretty scary. That's pretty dark.
Yeah, so Riggs is pissed because they tried to kill him. Now they have Roger's daughter. And I like how Riggs goes, we're going to get bloody on this, Raj.
We do this my way. You shoot to kill. Get as many as you can. All you gotta do is just not miss.
I won't miss.
We're gonna get bloody on this one, Roger.
Oh, well, it's true. They are.
But think about that scene in the movie. It's a promise to the audience that we're gonna get to see Riggs kill a bunch of bad guys.
This is gonna be awesome.
This is gonna rock.
It's yeah,
gonna
it's, be awesome. This is, let it flow.
I just feel sorry for his wife because it doesn't seem like he's telling her anything.
Oh, she's just upstairs singing Christmas music.
Christmas. That makes me think immediately of Gremlins.
There's a connection. In fact, for some reason, for the longest time, I thought it was a Darlene Love song that opened Lethal Weapon. Until just recently, whenever... it was Jingle Bell Rock, I realized. So it's just, there's this whole strange 80s crossover music thing
What's
going
funny
on.
Is because it's Christmas time now and you hear Jingle Bell Rock over and over again, I always think of Lethal Weapon.
See, for some reason, in my head, I had the Darlene Love song in Lethal Weapon because Darlene Love's in it.
Mm-hmm.
I just, recently, I didn't realize it.
They do show that the cop car is circling Roger's house, so I guess the other officers do know. I have my answer there, Jason.
Okay, all right. It just seems that it seems convenient that it's not being addressed.
Yeah, there's
like who approved that they then continue with this next scene where they put not only their lives but the lives of others in danger in the desert at the El Mirage Lake.
So basically, Riggs tells Roger, he goes, you know they're going to just kill her, right? They're going to kill all three of them. Or it's basically the only way to get his daughter back is to kill as many of them as they can. To just go in there, guns blazing, shoot them all. Which is a great video game mentality, I would think. You know,
it is, but you can't guarantee that the entire group that runs, you know, the Shadow Force people are going to be there.
Yeah,
like,
all
I mean,
in
that's
one
just
place.
Like, that's kind of putting the cart before the horse.
Mm-hmm. But that's the way Riggs, you know, goes about it. He likes to just kill as many people as possible.
Hey, you got to.
Yeah.
As long as they kill everyone there and not the daughter, then they're good.
So then we have this great scene over the desert where I'm thinking this, how nerve-wracking would this drive for probably hours out to the desert be, you know, for this meeting?
This isn't local.
But this whole scene is like, hey, Michael came in, guys. You guys, this is your moment. Just
battle.
Go nuts over this whole desert establishing scene.
Fight!
Dun, 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 dun. And we have Riggs running through the desert. That's so awesome. He needs a sniping position, basically.
Yes, he needs to get a nice, you know, 1,000 yards. The wind's good.
High wind. It doesn't matter.
If Roger would have just gone with them and not put up any fight at all, you know, just like, okay, here I am, they would have just shot his daughter probably in front of him, wouldn't they, and just taken
him
anyway?
Absolutely, yeah.
They basically did what they had to do. There's no way the guys would be reasonable. Okay, your daughter can go. We're just taking you. Can your daughter drive home from here? Does she have directions? Or
yeah, does she know her way home from the Mojave? Does she visit here regularly?
What I remember about the scene is my same friend Walter, who talked way too loud. He was like, "You stupid bitch!
Wow,
sit down and stuff like that." You know the part where Rianne's like going, you know, when Riggs is shooting everybody, he was like, "God, you stupid bitch!" You know, he was very vocal about how annoying she was in the scene. Yes, she is annoying, but I can understand
she's a child.
I can understand why she's freaking out.
She's a child surrounded by death.
But
come
he's
on.
Just like, "Stupid bitch! Why didn't she grab a gun of one of the bad guys and start shooting people?" It's like, why would she think to do that?
She's worthless.
Like, she's going to just pick up a Uzi and go just to unload on the bad guys?
Well, it's totally natural.
Now, that would be awesome, but it's never going to happen.
No, she stayed in character. Thank God.
If she's going to die, she's going to die my way.
If she's going to die, she's going to die with me. My way, not yours.
I like the scene. He's got a grenade, Bill. It's a good idea, right?
No, that is a good idea, yeah.
It should have been a live
grenade. They don't want to die.
It shouldn't have been a smoker.
Well, I think they were all far enough away that the frag maybe, I don't think it would have really killed anybody.
Yeah, maybe, like that they go
took
there.
Took out some carburetors or maybe some flesh wounds.
The reason they even want them is because they know Mr. Joshua saw them there talking with Hunsacker, and they want to know if they know anything about the shipment that's coming in.
Yes.
What's funny is they don't know anything about it. He didn't
know. No,
tell
they're
them.
Totally clueless.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out why people keep dying. So maybe if Shadow Company stops killing people, you know, they would back off.
Honestly,
but no, let's kidnap people and kill more people.
If they would have just left him alone, Riggs and Murtaugh would have just still been trying to look for him, you know?
Yeah, they would have had no idea what's actually going on.
They wouldn't have known they were in this nightclub with a bad metal band in the strip.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell that is, that weird rock and roll band.
I think that's the band that plays Lethal Weapon over the credits.
Probably.
The Lethal Weapon!
And then, you know, he's got the grenade, and he wants his daughter, and then all the shit happens.
Officer Murtaugh! Don't be foolish! Look at the hardware!
And Riggs is killing them all. Good times.
Yes, yet they're all captured.
Yeah, they all get captured.
Really good attempt. Not exactly the best execution.
You know what I love about Mr. Joshua in the scene, though? Because he's like, you're being foolish! Look at the hardware! And he's like, but if you look at Mr. Joshua, he's wearing a nice sweater.
Yes, very, very preppy, very well-dressed.
Very well-dressed. He looks like he just came from the country club.
He's basically the Patrick Bateman of Special Forces.
Yeah. But the scene where they're chasing Rianne and she's in the car trying to drive away.
Yes.
Just my friend was getting so upset over that.
Well, it sounds like your friend has issues.
He definitely had a lot of issues.
Female issues in general.
I remember one of his things that he used to do that would drive us nuts is he would tell you what kind of gun was in the movie. Like, he goes, "Oh, that's a Sig Sauer something 996. And we'd be like, "Hey, nobody asked."
So he's kind of a psychopath.
Yeah.
He has problems with women and he knows guns.
Well, it'd be like if some scene were like, "Oh, yeah, I'm sure he never runs out of bullets." Actually, well, that has a banana clip with about 35 rounds on it. There's no way he's going to run out of it.
Jesus.
It's just like, okay.
Did you ever go, "Why am I friends with you?"
Eventually, yes.
Okay.
But I like that scene when Riggs is shooting everybody and Rianne just standing there. And he's like, "Rianne, get in the effing car!"
"Yeah, get in the fucking car!"
Yeah, it's true.
It's like, get out of here.
Well, he was getting upset with her also. You know, don't just stand there and get shot.
I like when Riggs is finally about to shoot Mr. Joshua. He's like, "Good, come on, Cottontail."
Cotton, yeah.
He's like, "Good night,
Jackrabbit, son of a bitch."
Come on, Cottontail, stick your head out. That's it, you son of a bitch. Good night.
And then there's a great scene where they're just walking, and he's like, "I ran into some of you Shadow Company pussies in Nom."
Oh yes, after he's discovered by
McAllister. General yes. McAllister. And they're just kind of walking across the desert with his hands over his head.
You're General Peter McAllister, commander of Shadow Company. I see we've heard of each other. Yep. It'll almost be a shame when I nail you. Yeah, I ran into some of those Shadow Company pussies in Saigon in about 69. You did you?
But if he's Special Forces and Shadow Company Special Forces, I don't... Is Shadow Company not Army Special Forces? Are they another type of...
I'm thinking they were, like, there, but they were secret operation, you know?
Okay, so they were, like, Blackwater.
Yeah, and Riggs is saying he ran into a couple of those pussies, meaning he probably kicked their asses or something.
Yeah, absolutely, I'm sure he did.
But I like when he goes, "I ran into some of you Shadow Company pussies, Nom," and General McAllister just goes, "Oh, you did you?"
Yeah. I'm surprised we didn't kill you then.
Now let's get to the great torture scene, Bill.
Go spit.
Go spit.
Go spit.
But I want to talk about a certain guy named Endo.
Endo, yes.
Everything he's learned about dispensing pain, you and I will never know. Like,
no, yeah.
He's
a long history of it.
What does he say? He's forgotten more about dispensing pain. I forget the line, but...
Yeah.
All we know is he doesn't feel emotion anymore.
No, he's an expert in disconnected torture.
Endo here has forgotten more about dispensing pain than you and I will ever know.
Right, Mr. Endo. And you will recognize this guy as the candy thief from Die Hard.
Yes, the candy thief. He was in Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes,
he was Genghis Khan in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh man, what's this guy's name? Because he's awesome.
Al Leong.
Al Leong. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, he's been in everything. I mean, he was the quintessential '80s henchman. In fact, there's a documentary coming out about him.
Yeah, he's that guy. When you see him, you're like, I know that guy. I've seen him in things.
I mean, come on. Starting with. He was the hatchet guy in Big Trouble in Little China, and then he was in They Live and Die Hard and Action Jackson.
Die Hard and Lethal Weapon are things I know mostly from. Oh, was he in Action Jackson also?
Yeah, he was. The chauffeur for Delaplane.
So he probably knew the Huey Lewis guy.
He absolutely knew him because he personally.
That's awesome. Endo's forgotten more about dispensing pain than we'll ever know. That's what he says.
Yes. Well, he's had a big history of it. And he was in Lethal Weapon 4.
Was he really?
Yes. He's just a nameless role, like an action, you know, somebody. Ah. But he was in it.
Well, you notice here Riggs says, "Who's the chin?"
Who's the chin?
Yes.
We know that
racist.
Riggs is very racist, especially towards Asians.
Yeah, he's not only racist, but he's bigoted. Well, he's just bigoted.
We also know that maybe it's because he's in Vietnam, he just doesn't like Asian people. You think?
You know what? It's possible, but the guy isn't Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there's no. Don't hold it against him.
I know.
Riggs has problems. You know, Riggs has problems with everyone.
He
so
speaks
maybe it's
excellent English, even.
He does. He's fluent. If surprisingly, it might be his first language.
I like how he's like, "You need to tell us what you know about the shipment." He goes,
"Why don't you guys just call it heroin? It's rather large, the shipment. It would be unfortunate, however, if we showed up to deliver our heroin. We're surrounded by 50 cops.
That would be too bad."
"Yes, it would be.
It's a lot of heroin, so we just call it the shipment."
I like the scene where they're basically electrocuting Riggs, torture, shock therapy. Electric shock treatment. But I love Riggs in here. He's like...
"Come on, tell me about the
ship it! I'm gonna fucking kill them all to you!
Very funny. I wanna know about the shipping.
This He's is what kill these guys.
I hate in these movies with bad guys whenever they're torturing people and asking them things and the person really doesn't know. They just, they're like, you're lying. It's like, dude, what could I tell you to convince you?
Nothing. But this is one of those movies that it kind of goes against it. It's like, he doesn't know anything.
No shit, we're safe. He'd have told us. Nobody can take that.
Fine. Badass soldier, huh?
Like, you never, no one would ever survive that and not say something.
Yeah, the guy says, this guy didn't know shit. He would have talked. And then Mr. Josh was like, badass soldier, huh? He's like, well, as a matter of fact, yes, he is, because he's about to escape.
he's about to break someone's neck.
But that's what I love about the scene right before he busts in. Remember, General McAllister says, there are no more heroes left in the world. And then he's like, boom, busts in the room. Perfect timing, am I right?
Yep, absolutely. Now, he's a hero.
Who got it worse, Riggs being electrocuted or Murtaugh getting salt shoved into his bullet wound?
You know what? I would have to go with Riggs because I, you know, salt just burns. The bullet wound thing, the electricity, I don't like that shit. No. I mean, as a kid, I remember my dad was working on the garage and he had a panel of lights for the garage, but it didn't have the protectors over it, what would you call that? The face plates for the light switches.
Uh-huh.
And it was dark and I reached around the corner to turn it off and I stuck my finger inside the light switch.
Oh.
And that feeling when you get electrocuted, like a direct line of voltage.
It's not good.
That shit hurts. Like, it's like the worst aching pain. And I can't even imagine like that. Ooh, no. I hate seeing people electrocuted. That's hardcore shit there.
That's why this scene is great when the endo, he says, sorry, pal. He's about to put him out of his misery. I love that Riggs breaks his neck with his legs.
Sorry, pal.
Say goodnight. Awesome.
Sorry, I just snapped your neck like a chicken chin. Here's some wonton soup, something. Something horribly racist.
Creepy General McAllister, he likes to go, that's a real good-looking girl you got there.
That's a real good-looking young woman you got there, Mr. Murtaugh.
Well, he just wants to be extra creepy.
And then I like, Roger's like, I'm warning you, don't. Spare me, there are no heroes left in the world. And Q Rig!
Spare me, son, it's over. There's no more heroes left in the world.
I do love when Riggs is busting the room. You know, he's carrying the guy's dead body.
that's the cherry on top.
Olive is like, hey, I'll throw this dead body at somebody. Like, as soon as I walk in the room.
It'll buy me time. It'll shock the shit out of him.
And the first thing he does is he breaks a dude's effing neck.
Yes.
He's like, snap. It's awesome.
Well, who needs a gun?
Yeah, and then Olive, when he grabs the guy's gun and just shoots him, like, you see the bullet holes just pop out of his back, like shoots him point blank. Awesome.
Fantastic. That man's a lethal weapon.
And then I love when Riggs goes, who's effing next?
Yep, that's awesome. My favorite.
Don't get in the way!
Who's
in the way?
Fucking next? McAllister! Who's next?
That's my favorite.
And then
because I will do that all the time when I'm playing something and I'm
who's effing next?
So all this stuff, they've been tortured, they've been kidnapped, they've just killed people, and then what does Riggs do? What did one shepherd say to the other shepherd?
Yes, let's get the flock out of here.
He's still making jokes.
Yes, he's still throwing the one-liners out there.
Let's do what one shepherd said to the other shepherd.
What?
Let's get the flock out of here.
It's funny, there's one blonde bad guy that he shoots, and it's funny that I know that guy's blonde just so we will all think that he just shot Mr. Joshua.
Yes.
But he's like, when he's hanging on that chain, it's like, always left the squeakiness.
Jim?
No, it's not Joshua.
And there's that one bad guy that looks like Paul Schaefer. Have you noticed that one bald dude? And he's standing at the bar. That guy doesn't even have a second to think about anything. When he sees Riggs, he just guns him down. Yeah, and nobody reacts to the gunshots. It's like the music is so loud, nobody can hear people getting shot.
No, they're in an L.A. nightclub, and that's just very loud.
It's not until the bad guy comes out with an Uzi on the dance floor that everyone starts going, oh, wait a second, maybe we should duck.
I think it's torture enough that they were in a nightclub, that they really didn't have to do the electricity or salt or any of that.
Yeah. I love General McAllister's dream in Nam. When I get back home, I'm going to open up a nightclub with a bad hair metal band.
Yes. Well,
it's good to dream. General?
They call it the Double Douche.
What is the name of that bar they're in?
I have no idea. I don't think we're ever told the name.
Yeah. I need to try to look sometime and see what the bar's name is. Or whatever the hell it is. Some nightclub. But I love basically when Mr. Joshua is running away and he's shooting at them. He goes to this lady's car, and he's got a freaking machine gun, and the lady's still fighting with him for her car.
Yeah, no, I mean, that, no, she must have...
Stop! 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 Get out of the fucking car! Come on, get out!
Another one of those situations. I just paid for this!
Yeah.
I have a gun and a gigantic bag of grenades.
Lady, do you see my machine gun?
I don't care! Give me my car back! I just paid it off.
And I love, okay, we all know cops are not supposed to fire with, like, citizens standing around, but Riggs is just shooting in
traffic.
Screw
that shit.
Shooting down the street.
If you step in front of that bullet, it's your own damn fault.
I did always love this chase scene where he's on foot.
Hey, Rick! No! Oh, the freeway! He's going for the freeway!
You okay?
Yeah! Cut over the Third Street Bridge! You'll be able to get ahead of him!
That's great. That is great. Because it's just like, wait, this guy is insane.
Well, I love it. It's an 80s cop movie. You can't have the streets of L.A. without them all being wet. You know, like,
yes,
all the streets are now wet. Because
it always looks like it had just rained.
Uh-huh,
like,
yeah.
You don't ever see the rain, but it was there at some point.
Yeah, you know, they hose down all the streets so they look perfect with the light reflecting and everything.
Yep.
This whole, like, chase scene is just cool.
It's very well done.
You have
the chase and everything, and then a really elaborate sort of bus crash.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's I think it's... I'd like to know how much thought went into that. I mean,
what's funny is when Roger is going back to the club, he's, you know, going behind it. They play that David Sanborn. You know, he's just walking around. You know, yes. Roger's just got his wife beater on. He's walking. He looks like he's a zombie almost, doesn't he? He's had a rough evening.
A lot of spitting.
Yeah, go spit.
Go spit.
And, you know, General McAllister, he's like, kill that son of a bitch.
Let's get out of here.
Open the door.
Kill that cop, son of a bitch.
No way you live. No way.
No way you live. And he does the whole neck popping thing. Man, Riggs is a good shot, isn't he?
Yeah, like, I mean...
And so is Martin.
Yeah.
I mean, so is Roger
and Riggs.
Their names are confusing, Bill.
It is Murtaugh.
Roger Murtaugh, which does not roll off the tongue.
Yes, and he even talk axe whenever he's going to shoot someone.
Yeah. No way you live.
No way.
They should have had a scene where he's like, maybe I'll go in the alley. Yeah, I'll go back here.
But you know, one of my favorite lines from Mr. Joshua is when he goes, mind if I test drive your Audi?
Yes, yes.
Mind if I test drive your Audi?
All of a sudden, he's got a sense of humor out of nowhere. Where did that come from? What happened to the mindless robot killing machine? Now he's like, mind if I test drive your Audi?
I wonder how that... It really is. It's a change in character. I never thought about that.
I think
that,
it's supposed to show that he's stressing a little bit.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because later on, he's like, it's goddamn Christmas! So I think it's showing that, hey, you guys ruined everything. You ruined my Christmas now.
You ruined my shipment, my money. I'm no longer going to be able to afford my designer sweaters.
Yeah, because when you think about it, okay, Riggs chases him on the freeway and they're shooting and stuff, but he gets away. So Riggs has to run all the way back to find Roger, who has just, killed General McAllister, who's blown up on the streets, like right in front of everybody.
Yeah, as a kid, I always wondered, was he reaching for the grenades so that he could toss them out of the car, or was he reaching for the grenades because he wanted to blow himself up so he wouldn't be caught?
No, he was reaching because he knew the flames were about to hit them and blow him up.
Okay, see, like, because I was always trying to decide, is he trying to get a grenade so that he can set it off?
He's trying to get the hell out of there, but he's stuck. He's like, ah!
Why is he bothering with the grenades? Just get the fuck out of the car!
Because he's screwed. Yeah, he's pinned down.
All right. That scene always confused me. Like, I just didn't know what he was trying to achieve.
I think if he would push the grenades to the other side of the car, he would have had a little bit longer to live.
Yeah, I just always thought he was just like, okay, well, you're never going to take me alive, Coppa!
If you want to analyze the scene, the smartest thing about it is that the bus driver decided to go in reverse and back up a few feet.
Yeah.
I'm going to back away from this car.
Thankfully, my transmission isn't totally shot. I don't want to kill everyone.
And then when they blow up, they got to show Roger like...
That guy just totally fried. No way you live.
No way you live. No way.
I always laugh at the scene where Riggs is running back to him, and there's a crowd of people. He's got a machine gun, and the cops go to just hold their hands up like, hey.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, it's okay. And he shows his badge, and they're like, go ahead.
Gangway! Hold it, gangway. Police officer. Okay, go ahead.
All right, go ahead.
But it's like, the dude's got a machine gun. At least hold your gun up or something.
Yeah, hey, man, what do you got a machine gun? Yeah.
No,
nowadays,
cool.
He would just be dead. Like, that, no questions asked. Like, oh, my God, there's a crazy man with a machine gun. Kill him.
Okay, I want to ask you this. Do police have radios where they can all talk to each other?
I believe so, yes.
When Riggs comes back, he goes, I'm sorry, sue me. He got away. And he goes, son of a bitch knows where I live. Immediately radio the cops that are in front of your house.
Yes.
Because...
I mean, but there was the, you know, now they have them on them, you know, but maybe they didn't have a car that had a radio in it?
Or maybe they did radio them and they're like, okay, well, let's just sit here and look out for a suspicious guy.
Go spit!
And then,
that's
you know...
Spititious!
And then, Joshua drives up on me and is like, hello, good evening, officers.
I'm here to take his family hostage. Oh, okay, go right ahead.
Excuse me, sir. May we help you?
No, thank you.
And he freaking wastes those cops, Bill.
Yes, he does.
Guys, and they take out the fire hydrant, which would make a lake great... atmosphere for a fight later.
Man, it would make like the grass, the yard all wet, and it would the light and the mud and the I can't. That's a good idea. That's a good thing he did that.
When we first saw the movie, we thought that Roger's family might possibly be home in the scene, right?
Yeah.
So there is a sense of danger here, not him just entering a empty house.
No, yeah, absolutely.
We've just seen it so many times that we know nobody's there. Because he's like, what day is it? It's goddamn Christmas!
Good morning, sir.
Tell me, what day is it?
What day?
Goddamn Christmas!
Well, yeah, you know, if it's Christmas, Christmas Eve.
I mean, why I would Joshua... Did Mr. Joshua really think that he was home? Or did he just want to mess his house?
Well, no, I think he just wanted to take his family.
Just kill them all?
Well, I don't know if necessarily kill them all, but, like, hold them so that he could get the shipment now that they know about it? I don't know.
Because there's actually a note that says, Dear bad guys, we're not home or something like that.
Yes.
Were they just there and they left, or had they
no? They knew. I think they knew that if they were going to take his daughter once, maybe he would. They would try for because yes. That seems to be their MO.
Yeah, just families. Everybody leave. Everybody has to get out of here.
Yeah.
Now, okay. When Riggs and Murtaugh show up and they capture Joshua, what takes place is the most ridiculous. I don't understand why this is happening.
Okay.
They've arrested him. They tell him that General McAllister's dead. All they have to do is take him into custody. But that wouldn't make a good ending to a movie, would it, Bill?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, maybe they could do a chase through the suburbs or something. Right?
No, this guy needs to pay.
And he goes, what do you say, Jack? You want a shot at the title? And he's like, don't mind if I do. And now they're fighting on the lawn.
Yes.
What do you say, Jack? Like a shot at the title. Don't mind if I do.
And in the background, there's cops throwing money at like somebody collecting it on. Oh, no,
yeah,
I don't.
Got Riggs. Riggs is crazy cop. I'm going for the blonde guy.
Yeah. Oh, damn it, Cooley. It's the old woman cop taking the bets.
That would have been even better at the end. Like Riggs and Murtaugh don't shoot Joshua. You just hear a gunshot, and he's got shot right between the eyes. He's dead. And they turn, and they go, damn it, Cooley. He's the guy who kills him.
And then he just kind of shrugs. And then you hear, wah.
That Three Stooges, bum, 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 bum.
Yep. That's it.
Damn it, Cooley.
Cooley.
No, instead we get a fight.
Yeah, we get a
and
fight.
This is one of those fights, though, that it's... I don't remember if it was in the commentary or what. They went through a ton of trouble for this fight. They brought in three different trainers to show how lethal Riggs is. Like, they used a capoeira trainer, a jailhouse rock trainer.
Yeah, I remember that was a big thing. It's this form of martial arts called jailhouse rock.
And they used a jujitsu guy, and they shot this thing took like four nights from dawn to dusk.
They
and it's just, is it on screen?
No, it just looks like a bunch of crazy cuts and shit.
Exactly. I don't know if what they had would have been better.
I don't get the sense that Riggs is a badass at all here.
No, it's just this very quick kind of self-indulgent fight, yet this thing took 4 days and three different trainers.
When they start fighting, all of a sudden the film takes this weird Steadicam type of film that has never been seen through the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
and
you're
there's
right.
Rain and shit everywhere, and...
It's very 80s over-stylized.
Yeah. And all the cops are like, you know, like, hey, what are we doing? He goes, Murtaugh. They make sure that they let you hear that on the radio, that the dispatcher is like,
my responsibility here.
I repeat, watch commander is en route. Until then, Sergeant Murtaugh is in charge on site.
And he's basically telling them, let him fight it out. Son of a bitch just killed two of our men. And wouldn't you be like, okay?
Oh, all right. This is strange.
Okay, let's watch him find him.
Is this like Old West justice? I don't quite understand.
And I like the part where, you know, he's like drowning Riggs in the water and he goes, Riggs, let me take him. And he goes, no!
Let him take him! Come on, let me take him! No, please! No, back up!
Yeah.
No. Come on.
No. I got this.
And then he gets him in the great chokehold with his legs.
Yes.
Okay, this is the part I have always had a problem with. I think even when I first saw it, I thought it was ridiculous that he's choking him out and he goes, it's not worth it.
Yes.
Because Murtaugh says, break his effing neck. And then Riggs looks at him and he goes,
break his fucking neck.
So Murtaugh turns like bloodlust, death hungry, crazy man, and Riggs is the one that pulls himself back. So you would think it would be the other way around.
And you know, Riggs is like, you lose. Okay, why?
And then he makes this weird fist and goes, "Hack!" And honks on his nose.
Oh, Karate Kid! Yes. He honks his nose. And then, okay, this stupid video effect that Richard Donner does in all of the Lethal Weapons.
I freaking hate this.
I hate it too. It's like soap opera effect all of a sudden. And Joshua reaches for a gun and they both get to shoot him. See, before it wasn't worth it because he could let him go. It's the surrender rule or something. Like, if I don't have to kill him, I let him go. So he did. But now he's reaching for a gun. We can kill him.
Yes,
right?
There is intent. So let's slow it down. Make it look horrible, smoky, grainy, ugliness.
Oh, God, I hate that. Because they do that with the car bursting out of the trailer thing in Lethal Weapon 2. But in... after that scene where he's dead, it cuts to the cemetery where he's... at Victoria Lynn's grave, his dead wife.
Merry Christmas, Victoria Lynn. I love you.
I eat that stuff up. I love it.
Oh, so do I, because he's good. That's what makes the movie are the emotional scenes with Mel Gibson's Riggs.
Yeah, he's like, goodbye. Merry Christmas, Victoria Lynn. And he loves his dead wife. It's real sad and everything.
I love my dead wife.
I love my dead wife.
I love my gay dead wife.
My dead gay son. That was, they kind of put that to bed, okay?
They did. They did a really good job at it. Like, he's going to be okay.
Yeah. Riggs shows up at the Murtaugh's house and, Rhiann answers the door. I'm pretty sure I'd have her locked up somewhere, but...
Yes.
She's still vulnerable, but...
Especially now that Riggs has said goodbye to his dead wife.
Yeah, he goes to bring a bullet to Roger.
Yes.
It's a bullet.
Give this to your dad, okay? It's a present for him. Tell him I won't be needing it anymore.
It's a bullet.
Yeah, it's a bullet.
Nope. I think... Let me analyze
this. Doesn't need
this.
It anymore.
Yeah, for the people on IMDb who don't understand, he doesn't need that to blow his brains out anymore.
He's found a new family. He's found someone that can help him through this.
And I also think that killing all those bad guys was therapeutic.
Absolutely. He's fired enough. He's fired guns enough now that he doesn't really need to. It's done. He's taken enough lives to substitute his own.
But I love how Roger comes out and he goes, "After all we've been through, you're gonna make me suffer the world's lousiest turkey."
After all we've been through. I think I'm going to eat the world's lousiest Christmas turkey by myself. You're crazy.
Mm. Can Trish really be that bad a cook?
No.
There's no way.
There's no way. I mean, how hard is it to cook a turkey?
And then there's that deep moment. Can I tell you a secret, Raj?
I'll tell you a little secret.
What?
I'm not crazy.
I know.
I'm not crazy. I knew it. You were just trying to get psycho pension. The captain was right. And then he's busted right then. Movie's over. He goes to jail.
Can't believe it.
Worst ending ever. Now,
I think the worst ending ever is that Riggs brings his dog.
With the truck door open. It's funny, when you first see the movie, you don't even care about stuff like that or even notice it. But you watch it so many times, you're like, wait a second, why is this car door wide open?
Hey, you mind if I bring a friend?
Why don't you bring a friend?
Hey.
Well, and then they go in the house without closing the door. Like, I would have accepted a scene better where he goes, hey, is it okay if I brought someone and walks to his car, opens the door, lets the dog out, closes the door, you know, and then walks in with Riggs. Except he leaves the door wide open. The dog runs in, terrorizes Burbank.
The freaking dome light in the car is going to make his battery go dead.
That is my first freaking thought.
Well, also,
like, have I become such an adult that my thought is, oh shit, his car's not going to start.
Well, what about this, Bill? He's in the truck. Is he like, hey, Sam, the dog, wait here until I whistle for you. Here, I'm going to open the door, though. Okay, and I'm going to go walk over there. And then he's like, hey, is it okay if I bring a friend? Yeah. And then the dog comes in. Then the door stays open.
Or how about the doors are closed and it's a pickup. So it has
and
that,
the window's
that
down.
Bed window. Yeah, just let the dog jump out of the car through the window or something.
Or what about this? The dog is just in the bed of the truck.
There you go.
Or this, the dog just gets out and he's with him the whole time.
I can't believe this bothers me as much as it does.
Well, it is annoying. Why is a freaking car door open at the end of the movie?
I mean, I love the movie. I do. Problems and all. I still love it, but it's just one of those things that bugs the living shit out of me.
Well, what I love is after it's all over and, you know, he goes, I bet on the mutt or whatever, and the dog goes in and he goes, I don't think Burbank the cat's going to like this.
I don't think Burbank the cat's going to like this.
I'll put five on the mutt.
I'm too old for this.
And everyone's freaking out. That's a funny way to end the movie. And
it
then
is.
We have the greatest song of all time called Lethal Weapon, Bill.
Lethal Weapon, yes.
A lethal weapon. Because it's one of my favorite things in movies to make fun of is they should have had a title song where it says the title of the movie. And this has one.
And this is, I had to look up the band, and it's a Canadian hard rock band. And there's just something about Canadian hard rock bands.
Look at a Canadian band to sing the Lethal Weapon song.
Like, and it's the band's name, Honeymoon Suite.
Wow.
Because they formed in 1981 at Niagara Falls. And Niagara Falls is the unofficial honeymoon capital of the world.
Oh, my God.
So these guys put so much thought into that.
Whatever shows these guys perform, do you think people are like, Lethal Weapon, Lethal Weapon?
Oh, absolutely. Here's the sad part, though. In spring of 1987, the band performed the title track for the film Lethal Weapon, composed by Michael Kamen. In the winter of 1987, the band started work on their third album in L.A. You know, you'd think they're really on top of things. And Johnny D. was hit by a car at LAX Airport, and Johnny D. is the singer, the man who gave voice to Lethal Weapon.
Don't tell me he died.
No, he didn't die. He just broke a lot of bones and broke his leg in several places, required surgery to insert a 10-inch pin. I can't believe that there's an entire Wikipedia page dedicated to this.
The band that sang Lethal Weapon?
Yes. I mean, I'm shocked. Apparently he was friends with Michael McDonald, and Michael McDonald was brought in to help with recording sessions on their new album.
Excellent.
So there you go.
Who knew?
Who knew? I mean, come on. There is a massive page all about Honeymoon Suite. I had no idea that this Canadian rock band was as prolific just from, you know, I never heard of them.
I'm curious of how soon after Lethal Weapon did Gary Busey have his accident and go completely
batshit? Yeah, exactly.
Because I guess, like, I remember after this movie came out,
had to be in the 90s because he did...
Oh, my God. I was looking at IMDb. Okay. 1987, he did Lethal Weapon. 1988, yes. Bulletproof as Mick Bane.
Oh,
so
nice.
That was like his career is taking off now, Bill.
Butthorns.
Your worst nightmare, Butthorn.
And then, of course, I remember him from Predator 2.
Yeah.
He was in that. And Point Break. And I think Point Break was after that he was... crazy.
No, because he did Under Siege.
Under Siege, you're right. I'm trying to look for
him and Tommy Lee Jones did Under Siege. And Drop Zone in 94. That accident had to be...
Dude, he worked like every year. Like,
he did.
Even I after his accident, he didn't take any time off.
It was in December 1988 was the accident.
Wow.
So he was okay through all that stuff. Like, it was Predator 2 was after the accident.
Wow. Did he just start getting worse and worse or something?
I think so. It was probably like a degenerative brain disorder.
Holy shit.
Because he kept working. I don't understand how he kept working. But, yeah, Point Break, Predator. Yeah, that's so weird that he's actually deteriorated through the years.
Yeah. So, what, I mean, Bill, what do you say about Lethal Weapon? Because I fondly, I have a fondness for Lethal Weapon.
Absolutely.
And I even enjoy Lethal Weapon 2. I think anyone who's heard our commentary of Lethal Weapon 3, we think it's ridiculous.
It's quite possibly, well, you know what, Lethal Weapon 2 starts getting into that area where Lethal Weapon 1 really is, it's the Lethal Weapon film. It's the dark center of that universe.
Right. And
Lethal Weapon 2 gets a little too jokey with the Leo Getz horse shit.
It's not until they kill his girlfriend that he starts going to crazy rigs again.
Yeah.
And they even have it where the bad guy, not only did he kill his new girlfriend, it turns out he killed his wife also.
Yeah, that was a little much.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's fun. I'll still watch Lethal Weapon 2 whenever it's on. But
oh, so why? Yeah, but 3 and 4 are just...
I'll watch Lethal Weapon 3 and groan throughout the whole thing, like, ugh.
Yeah, that's... And I remember when they were shooting it, that was such a big deal. Like, watching HBO and seeing those making ofs and...
They'd always do those HBO specials.
Yeah, and they had this making of... And Gibson and Glover were wearing those huge... Do you remember those, like, extra long starter, like, puffy jackets? They, like, went down past your ass. And they... Yes. I think one of them had a Raiders one, and I was like, oh, I gotta have that. You know, and it's just, I remember watching that thinking that this is so cool. They're making another Lethal Weapon. It's in there like in this like subdivision under construction, and there's fire everywhere. It looks awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we saw it.
And dude, honestly, when I saw it in the theater, I had no problem with it. I enjoyed it. Oh, the boys are back, man. This is funny and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's after watching it on cable several times, you're like, this isn't that good.
It even opens with that, you know, that like Zippo lighter clicking song that Eric Clapton and Sting did.
Yeah, we talk about that on the freaking
I mean, come on, commentary. That was freaking awesome. The fire and the opening. That was, is that when the crazy openings really started? Or was that 2?
The third one, remember, that's the bomber, the mad bomber guy that they never even find. It has nothing to do with the movie. Okay. The bomb squad. And then the third one is with the guy with the flamethrower, which is completely ridiculous.
Oh, my God. That is the third one, isn't it?
No, it's the third one's the bomber. The fourth one's the flamethrower guy.
Okay, yeah. That was just...
The second one just opens with them in a chase in Medias Res in the midst of things.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, that I just remember whenever they started doing the crazy openings, it was like, oh, boy.
The main thing I think is funny about all these movies, the police work seems pretty thin.
Ah, that's pretty fucking thin.
That's very thin.
Now, what the hell, thin's my middle name?
Yeah, your wife's cooking, I'm not surprised.
Oh, the police work's terribly thin.
There's no, like, real police work involved.
There's no police work involved. Because even when there is police work involved, the police end up getting killed.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I mean,
it's
so funny. Is it the third one or the second one where they pick them off one by one?
It's the second one. They start killing all their other guys, including, what's his face from Breaking Bad? I noticed as one of their partners, one of their cop buddies.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Shit. Dean Norris.
Yes, Dean Norris is one of the cops in Lethal Weapon 2. It's pretty
hilarious. Why am I thinking of Mike? Who's he? He's one of the bad guys, isn't he?
Mike?
Yeah.
He's the bad guy in Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, Jesus. That's
Jonathan Banks. That wraps up Lethal Weapon, a movie that both of us hold near and dear to our heart.
Yes.
We we have forgotten more about this movie than anyone will understand. I think we're just like Endo torturing.
Endo here has forgotten more about dispensing pain than you and I will ever know.
Yeah, I mean, we remember certain things, and then you discover things, and then you know, it's not a movie that has particularly aged well, but it is still fun.
It's that 80s Joel Silver action movie. And you know what? We should totally do, like, Last Boy Scout, something like that.
Oh, we have to. We have to. That's whenever Shane Black really kind of reached his pinnacle of one-liners.
Yeah. Well,
and I would love to do The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yes, that would be fun. That movie is ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous.
But guys, I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you love Lethal Weapon as much as we do. It's okay if you don't. Hopefully you're entertained by it. It is a silly action movie, but Mel Gibson was doing something cool in the movie. It's just they turned him into cartoon characters later.
I think that's why he became so big afterwards.
Well, what's funny is one thing that I loved him for was Mad Max. Well, if you think about it, Mad Max and the Road Warrior was a guy who lost his family.
Yes.
Who was a shell of a man. Really, Riggs is like a continuation of that type of character, you know?
He is. He absolutely is. He could be his American cousin.
In fact,
and a police officer at that.
I know that Mel Gibson himself really, he gets off on that revenge kind of storyline. The guy who's been wronged and wants to...
Well, that's because the Jews wronged him. I'm sorry.
Hey, you never know, Bill. You never know.
No, I can't go there. That's.
But guys, I want to thank everyone for supporting us in the show, and I hope you enjoy this, and I hope you tune in for the next one. Bill, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, sir.
And I'll see you guys on the flip side. I don't know what that means. Now, I'll see you guys next time. Oh, I want to end with this one thing, Bill. I got to tell you, it's very important.
All right.
It was pain.
It's pain.
It was pain.
It was pain.
Oh, it was a tattoo.
Pain?
Pain?
Pain.
I don't know.
Pain. Painted.
Mm-hmm.
Painted. Tattoo.
Tattoo?
Like Popeye. Like Popeye. A tattoo like Popeye. Oh, not like Popeye.
Yeah. Oh, it's a tattoo.
Oh, tattoo.
All right, Bill. Excuse me while I go put an APB out on Big Bird.
All right.
Go spit.
Now this is podcasting.